Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Mike, they've been building up this LA show, it feels like, for months. And, well, I guess it was months because there was a best of seven series, and they announced pretty early on that the finals, if they got to a match seven, would take place tonight. And they did. Just in a big macro sense, did it feel like a big show to you, being in LA at Kia Forum with the main event that they presented and also the supporting matches and segments? Did it feel like a big show?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, the main event was a pay-per-view caliber match for sure. But so was Moxley and Hangman earlier in the show that started things off. You had the return of Adam Cole. Like, you had a lot of things on here that made it feel like a big show, I thought.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. In terms of doing a show like this, there wasn't like that big angle or big announcement or like major celebrity, with all due respect to the two who appeared. And I didn't think they did a good job, but they never do, showing like the city they're in and like kind of bringing it to the scene of the show. But they do this week have a matching ring apron and barricade banners. Last week they didn't. It was late. It's like you buy a new suit for the wedding, but the pants don't get there. So you got the shoes and the jacket and the shirt and the tie, but the pants don't match. That's what it felt like last week. They got the pants this week, and it completed the look. And I am happy, because I am not a fan of mismatched color schemes when you're, you know, doing a big makeover to redesign and rebranding a show. So I was happy. I almost think they should have not done it last week and just waited until LA.
Absolutely.
I agree.
That's what I said last week watching the show. I was like, geez, if you don't have everything, it would be like you said, you get the suit without the pants. So, but well, I would still wear my old suit until I got the
right,
pants.
Right, exactly. Yes. You don't wear the pants that match the old suit. You wear the, you wait.
Yeah, you wait. It did look a little ridiculous last week.
Yeah. I don't want to spend any more time on it than that, but I did want to sneak that in that I can now say I like the new look. I could not say that last week because of the mismatch. You can't like, I used the kitchen analogy last week. But you can't like a new kitchen with new granite countertops if the floors are still like 1980s vinyl. Not that AEW is that out of date, but the color schemes are such a mismatch. But, you know, the critique is they shouldn't have done anything new last week. They should have saved it all at once. Okay, I got that out. So you mentioned the Trios titles. The Elite win this one. Ladder match went about 20 minutes. Just what stood out to you in the match? I want to disclose this because, Mike, you know this. I had internet problems the last 2-3 days and was like, I'm going to get this fixed before Dynamite. That's my goal. And I got it fixed 40 minutes into Dynamite. I was on a support call with Linksys. I want to give them a shout out. This is two times in the years I've been using their mesh Wi-Fi systems. They're not a sponsor. I'm just saying this. Their customer service is fantastic. And they spend all the time you need on the phone walking you through something that I would not be able to figure out with some tutorial on their app or a video or anything. I mean, the number of things we had to do and test and all the blinking lights of different colors and all that, we got it solved. And unlike Monday night for Raw, unlike the flagship yesterday, I'm not going to have to splice together various, you know, snippets when the internet went out and I had to cover for it with post edits. I think we're back in this. But I did have to – I concentrated on the show, and I got my report up with all the key points, but I had to speed through – at fast forward some of the matches, which I'll go back and watch, of course. And I just don't like doing that. But I want to disclose that because there just could be some big spot or a big happening. And I told you, Mike, you know, pay attention for me because I'm going to have to speed through this. There might be some things I missed. But the main event, just like it was, well, the opening match was a banger. I know it's sort of an overused term and people roll their eyes, and that's fine. But it fit the term and the spirit of that word. How would you describe the main event ladder match, match seven?
So let me preface by saying I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was entertaining. All right. I had fun watching the match. I feel like if you say anything critical about this match, people are going to just jump down my throat. But it felt like, as good as it was, it did feel a little rushed. And if I had, I guess if I were to have to put one word to it, that might be it. It was just very like one spot to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And I don't know. I mean, they didn't get to the ring till 9:45 Eastern. So that was, I thought about that
and
right away, looking
long
at the clock. And
they ran
they
long.
Did. And they did get a,
so they actually were
they
sitting
did.
Running, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I am curious on how that happened too. If they got, if they made it, did Tony make a phone call, you know, at 9:45 going, is there any more time you can give me? Or did they have a little bit of an overrun built in all along? But it did seem like it was kind of rushed from one spot to the next. And that's been typical of AEW at various times where things aren't timed out correctly, or just there's a lot they're trying to fit in and spots don't have time to breathe. And even the end, I mean, the ending had a little bit of a time to breathe with the Elite standing there on the ladder, but you know, maybe a longer reaction there where they're showing the crowd shot and everything. And I like that type of stuff. It just with the announcers kind of fall out and just let the moment breathe for itself. But you didn't really have time to do that. It was entertaining. It was fast-paced. It was electric. I mean, the crowd was incredibly into it. But it did feel a little like, okay, that spot's done. We got to get to the next one. So as what would normally happen in that situation, selling becomes less, and it's just kind of very running from spot to spot to make sure that, and I'm just guessing here, but they had, you know, maybe 18 minutes to get in 25 minutes worth of stuff. You know, that's kind of what it felt like. And everything was on like 1.25 speed. It wasn't on double. It wasn't double time, but it was like 1.25 speed.
Well, it's confusing because I'm having, you know, to fast forward just in order to start the show reasonably on time. I have to fast forward here and there to get through the match, which, again, I do not like doing, especially with a match with this much buildup and all that talent in the ring. But when I was just playing it, I'm like, Is it still fast forwarding? Like, it almost seemed like it was still fast. Yeah, it was like speed and a half or speed and a quarter. But you know what? All their matches are. This felt like more so. You know, no question. It's like, we got all these spots planned. We're doing all of them. And I mean, the one-winged angel off the bridge ladder spot, it's like, I mean, I'm just like cringing watching it. You know, they're pros. They know how to pull this stuff off. But man, you know, some of the stuff that they did looked dangerous, but then it was well executed. You watched it at 1.25 speed, in other words, live. Was there anything that looked like it went wrong?
I don't know if it went wrong, but it was the thing that looked, I thought, like it hurt the most and could have caused an injury the most was the was Matt coming off the top rope and hitting the ladder kind of with his tailbone, and his legs snapped over the ladder, and he immediately looked like he grabbed like the back of his leg or his hamstring. I don't know if that went wrong, if he was supposed to land. I mean, I don't know how differently do you take it. So you just land with the small of your back on the ladder. I mean, that probably hurts more to be honest with you. So I don't know if that was an incorrect landing or not, but that definitely made the one that was the one that made me go like, ooh, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong there. You could snap something in your knee, your leg. Obviously, you got, you know, bones in the bottom of your back, tailbones right there. I mean, that one looked like it was one of the worst landings of all the spots. And none of them look comfortable. I mean, you got Kenny going out of the ring through a table to the outside with nobody catching him. You've got the one-winged angel off the setup ladder, like you said. Like, nothing looked like it was pleasant, but the one with Matt coming off the ropes and or coming off the top and hitting the ladder the way that he did look like it may have been the most uncomfortable of all of them.
Did Kenny do a better than average job with the awkward position wrestlers in ladder matches are put in, slowly climbing the ladder either to add drama to the win or previous to that, wait for someone to pull him down or knock him down or meet him at the top? Did he pull it off with his body language or not?
So this would be the one of the few nitpicks I had was that whole sequence, because it was just funny to me that they were like literally running from spot to spot throughout the course of the match. And then all of a sudden right here at the finish, it's a slow climb.
Exactly, yes. That was it.
This is going to take all the time in the world, but we've just spent, you know, the last 18 minutes running around from spot to spot.
No selling, basically. Yeah. Major spot. But when it comes time to climb a ladder, oh, the recovery time. I need more time.
Yeah, and there was one sort of pull away shot too, where I want to say it was Pentagon and Pac at the just on the canvas, kind of like reaching one arm up, like no, and they seemed to be doing that for a little bit of time too, so it did seem like it took a while. It was that one kind of made me chuckle a little bit, and then also Phoenix taking before he took the one Wigan Angel off the ladder. I sat there and I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit, and I'm like, he's putting himself on Kenny's shoulders. Like he went to the other side of the ladder and was like kind of he was like, Kenny, duck your head. All right, I'm going to sit down now. It just, it looked, and again, they're rushing. They may not have had time to do something to set that up. I don't know. But it just was like, okay, can we, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief, but can we do something to make this look like it's not, you know, it's just a planned dance move or a planned spot here.
What about not hearing from them, either team, before the match? I know Renee tried and said she didn't have any luck. Did I fast forward through a promo from either team and miss it?
No. Nope.
Yeah. So, like, to me, and I've been critical of the Bucks and Kenny for this, being a top-paid act on a nationally televised show on a major cable network doesn't just include what they did tonight for 15 minutes. It includes the type of layered storytelling that we see with the Bloodline, for instance, or just sports-like promos. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, the holding everything up to the Bloodline is difficult because it is so, you know, almost once in a generation in terms of some of the stuff that we're seeing that's being done so well and so nuanced and all the different players interacting with all the chemistry that they have. But, I mean, they had 7 matches over the course of more than 2 months. And is there anything you can tell me storyline-wise about the ebb and the flow other than what Excalibur and Taz and Shivani tried to convey through commentary about momentum and confidence, anything? Like, it really looks like, this sounds like a dig, and it is, that they put zero thought into anything about this best-of-7 series other than what happened between the bells or a little bit of pre-bell action in that match that took place mostly outside of the ring. And, I mean, you know, it's fine. It's going to satisfy a big part of their audience. I mean, no denying it. And it's a great ingredient to have. I mean, let's not – you can satisfy a lot of wrestling fans with just what they did. Let's not understate that. But you can bring it up a level by seeming like you understand you're not at the Tokyo Dome. You're not at a PWG show. You're on a weekly television series, and there's stories to be told, and there's interviews to be given. And they could say, oh, and maybe this isn't on the Bucks and Kenny, because it can be on Tony Khan, like overbooking a show.
Yeah.
But to me, Mike, I want to hear from these guys more often. I want to know what's going through their heads. Penta and Rey Fénix, maybe less, but Pac can talk. And I want to see what the Bucks and Kenny are thinking. I want some sense of character development. And I want to know how they felt after match 3 and after match 6. And I just don't have that in my memory banks. And it took away from, for me, this match, because this was simply about a 7th match with a lot of athleticism and ladders as an added ingredient. Am I over wishing for that? Is it like superfluous or not important given everything else that happened bell to bell?
I think you're spot on. No, it's been one of my complaints for a while with the company is like the great matches are great and they're fun to watch. Like, I'm not saying don't put on great matches, but I would appreciate a great match that had a great story told alongside of it. I mean, other than very early on with the hammers going back and forth, they're going to use the hammer, they're not going to use the hammer. That was like match 1 and match 2. And after that went away. It was just a series of matches. And I feel like it's not even exclusive to just this 7-match series either. They do that a lot, I feel like. And that's why I don't know if it's necessarily just on the Elite or is it on just Tony's style of booking, where sometimes there's a lack of storytelling within their company, and it's just a matter of like, here's the 5 best matches we think we can put on, and we're going to put them on all together here all at once without any real storytelling behind it. And it does get a little frustrating because it should be more than that. But it does feel like at times they just rely too much on the great level of workmanship they're going to have in the ring, and they don't put enough into the storytelling. That's been a frustration, I think, for a while, at least for me. Because other than like the MJF CM Punk story from their match over a year ago, you know, nothing's really come close to that level of just, like you said, nuanced, deep-rooted storytelling. It's just, it's very simple, it's very on the surface, and they don't go too deep.
Yeah. And it, even if it's not their favorite thing, and that could be Tony's not favorite thing or Kenny and the Bucks, like, get better at your craft. You're on national TV with the biggest audience by far you've ever had. It may not seem like that on the internet or in the newsletters or in year-end awards that you're a bigger star now than you were, but you are. Like, this is a much bigger audience than anything. Tonight was a bigger audience probably than they've ever had for anything they've done within a small percentage point of other Dynamite moments. And, like, you want to, you know, it's okay to bring something else and add another dimension to your act and not just treat it as if, well, you know, bell to bell, that's all we've got to say.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but, you know, I mean, the matches were great. What, by the way, just stepping back, how does this, and maybe it's too soon to say so, but how does this Best of Seven series go down for you? Not just comparing to other Best of Seven series, because frankly, sometimes they can be a little overrated because there's the novelty of it. But there is a novelty to this. And you know, world-class, modern-day athleticism on display in every match. And I thought they did. I think it's been wrongly criticized for some of the matches being too repetitive, seeming like they're sort of interchangeable, or just one long series of high spots over the course of seven matches. I think they did differentiate between the matches somewhat. I would have liked them to do it more, but that would have taken some promos and, you know, getting that the language and the facial expressions, you know, promos involved to help really solidify the mood changes and momentum changes and confidence changes throughout the series and any other storyline they might have wanted to tell. But overall, did this live up to or exceed expectations for you, Mike, and how do you think it'll be looked back on?
Yeah, so I thought they did a good job overall of keeping the matches different. I would agree with you there. I think that's, if that's a criticism, that's probably an incorrect one, because they all did feel a little bit different, and the rules kind of changed. They had different stipulations on each match, and I thought they did a good job there. I thought they did a good job of making them try to feel as unique as possible. I thought tonight was a great way to finish it. You know, overall, I think it's going to be remembered as a positive. I don't think you want to do stuff like this all the time, just because then it can get really repetitive. You know, if you're going to do another Best of Seven series in a month from now, it's going to be, I think you're going to get people rolling their eyes and be like, really, again? Like, we just did this. Because you do run the risk of it getting stale and growing old when you're wrestling seven times in a row over the span of a month and a half or whatever it's been, 2 months. So I don't think it's something you want to pull out all the time. Once in a while with the right group, I think it works. You know, I also think, though, the next time they do this, and it goes back to storytelling, find a reason for it to occur. Like, why was this a Best of Seven series? Just because they said it was on TV one day. Like, there wasn't really any story that prompted this to be a Best of Seven series. They just said during the first match that that's what it was, out of nowhere. I think that's how it got announced, right? I think it was just Excalibur saying they're going to have a seven-match series. There wasn't anything to it.
No, absolutely. It almost got lost in all the commentary. That, you know, it wasn't like – there wasn't a lot of pomp and circumstance to the announcement or the framing of it. It was a passing comment during the show. That's what Kenny and the Bucks do. You know, they got their acclaim, they got their EVP titles, they got their big contracts, they get all the praise in so many corners of the, corners, not to understate it, but, you know, not nooks and crannies, like in major areas of wrestling fandom, they get a ton of acclaim. And I think they just want to go out and make those people happy. And I'm a believer. And I've, you know, been saying it for years. There's a second million fans out there. There's more than 2 million watching SmackDown every week. Some of them can be won over. People are aware that AEW exists. And if you tell better stories and you have more layers to your characters and you don't just act like winning Observer Wrestler of the Year or getting 7 stars is it, you've achieved greatness, and now it's just an honor for you to turn your TV set on and watch us do these spots. If you say, well, that's going to work for, you know, half a million, million people. We want to expand beyond that. Like, that's how you help grow and bring more fans in. And I just don't sense that that's a priority for them. And I haven't. So, but, you know, like I said, I mean, it is a pleasing series of matches for the audience that they currently have watching. And they are super serving those fans. And you know what? Super serving a million fans. You can last a long time on cable television doing that. And, you know, they had a super enthusiastic crowd in LA. I love that AEW has had enthusiastic crowds again on this West Coast swing. You know, the key is it's the second and third visit. Sometimes there's diminishing crowds and diminishing energy. But tonight felt like a show that will bring those fans back with energy, you know, if they bring them a good lineup too.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, like, I look back at this too and think of – you look at – look at like an NBA playoff series, right? There's a lot that happens over the course of seven games. Maybe somebody gets hurt. Maybe there's you know, you're playing the Bucks, and the story is how are the Celtics going to stop Giannis? They can't stop him. It's been three games. He's been completely dominant. Like, there's storylines that the television broadcast will especially play up when they're trying to promote the next game and trying to get you to watch again. There's stuff like that that they could have done here. You know, whether it's maybe Kenny tries to put someone away. I'm never a fan of kicking out of finishers, but maybe, you know, Kenny tries to put somebody away with the one-winged angel in the first two matches and they kick out. And the story is, geez, that's not working. Like, what are the elite going to do to change this up? What's Kenny going to do to change this up? Because clearly that's not going to work. They have it scouted. He knows how to take it the right way. He's not getting the pin with that, so he's got to go somewhere else. Or even something as simple as somebody gets hurt, and maybe one of them's a three-on-two match because somebody gets hurt. You know, there's so many things you could have done that you see just within regular sport over the course of a best of seven.
Exactly. Yes. What you just said is exactly what I'm talking about. This isn't about some of the stuff that people might conjure up when you go, oh, create a storyline, like where it's like, oh, that's sports entertainment crap. Like, no, there's a way to tell sports-like stories, but you got to tell the stories. Anyway, let's pause, and we got a lot more to cover, including the return of Adam Cole, a teaser of a retirement. I want to get your thoughts on that. Really moving promo. It was a moving experience watching him talk about what he's been through. I assume it was all a shoot, brother, in terms of the details of everything that he's been through the last couple months. So we'll talk that and that banger of an opener and the Jericho segment and got some things to say about Ricky Starks and Andretti too, and more. So let's and we got phone calls lined up and emails coming in and a lot more to get to. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 11th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, and publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I am also the host of various podcasts, including these Wade Keller Post Shows and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. I do want to point you to yesterday's Blue Logo Show. This is our Red Logo Show, the Post Shows. But the Blue Logo Show is the Wade Keller Podcast, and that includes our weekly flagship. Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, joined me yesterday, and we talked for about an hour and a half about the Stephanie McMahon resignation and the Vince McMahon situation, because we had not had a chance to talk about Vince returning before Stephanie resigned on our flagship. Of course, we did a bunch of VIP shows in the meantime, but man, what a week. And I said during that show, and I didn't know how wild that unverified single source, whatever Saudi story that was out there going crazy. I'm like getting all these messages and texts from people going, is it true? While we're recording the flagship. And I just said, Stephanie resigning. I won't even get into it. Anyway, Stephanie resigning did not have to do with a pending sale. And I think people just connected that dot and ran with it as if, well, that must mean a sale is happening. And I told Rich, you know, on the show yesterday, they're not connected. And I was able to check around, and we just ignored the Saudi story because there wasn't anything to it, you know, in terms of it being a done deal. It's not to say it can't happen, but it's not necessarily even the leading contender for what's going to happen or why Vince came back. So we talked a lot about what really is going on with Stephanie and Vince, and this is sourced stuff. I'm bringing some insight, I will say, into what's going on here, not just guesswork. And I encourage everybody to listen, because if you want to get kind of the family dynamic and the psychology and kind of weed out some of the stuff that maybe is gaining traction that ought not be gaining traction out there, the yesterday's flagship will, I think, do that for you. So I recommend that. I try not to sound like I'm bragging too much about this, but I think so far we're pretty on with the Vince McMahon story covered last week in the Wade Keller Hotlines for VIP members and other shows I've done, and then same thing with the Stephanie story. So check that out. The other voice you hear so far on the show is Mike McMahon. I'm always excited when he's on the program because for so long, Mike, you were recording when this show was on, doing your PW Torch Daily Cast. At the same time, we're doing the Wade Keller Post Show. With the change in schedule, you are now sometimes available to be on Wednesdays, and I always love having you on to talk AEW. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it worked out. Again, there's a lot of Wednesdays where I'm not available or I'm watching Dynamite, you know, at 11 p.m. Eastern or whatever. But tonight was one of those nights where I was able to watch live. So when those happen, it's good to be able to do this.
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell people about your show with Andrew.
Yeah, it's with Andrew Sojak. We actually just celebrated. We talked about this last night on our show because I think it dropped today.
Is it really a celebration when you think about it?
I think so, yeah.
No, I know. I totally should have. That was just mean and dumb. Go ahead.
We just, I think it just got to 6 years. We've been doing this since 2017. And I mean, we started with Impact post shows way back in the day.
Oh, you stepped on my joke. Then, I was going to say, you've been talking about AEW for 2.5 years before the first Dynamite.
Yeah, we started with Impact all the way back when on Thursday nights. And then it's stuck together ever since. And in fact, we were joking around because I was telling Andrew, we're talking last night, I think, or maybe it was last week. I don't know if it was last night or last week, about how the show started. And I said, you know, Andrew, I said, I didn't even know. People don't believe that we don't know each other. Like, we've never met in
you
person.
You talked
ever.
About that. Yep.
People are like, really? You've never met? I go, no, he lives in Minnesota. I live in Boston. We've never met each other, ever. I go, this literally started, I think you emailed the two of us, like, on a Tuesday and said, hey, do you want to do a show on Thursday about Impact? Moving forward, and we both said, yeah, sure. And we started 2 days later, like just on a whim, and we've been doing it for 6 years. So clearly it worked out.
Yes.
But yeah, our show, we record every Tuesday, and it drops on Wednesday, and we talk about just a lot of AEW stuff, was behind-the-scenes stuff, what's going on business-wise, what's going on in the ring, storyline-wise. We kind of preview what you're going to see Wednesday. We went from being a post-show to a pre-show is what we like to say. So
I love your guys' chemistry. And your show is so fun. And I really encourage everybody to check it out. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app if you haven't already. There's just a great lineup of I am proud, and I don't know how much is happenstance and how much is some sort of like gut instinct skill set, but I feel really good because most people who do shows together on the Daily Cast lineup over the years have been me like introducing people to each other. When I had a feeling it might work out, it was way too long ago to know what I thought of you and Andrew, but it did work out. So I'm going to take credit for it.
It worked out great. Yeah. I think I was doing the Impact live. I was doing the live coverage of Impact at the time on the website. And Andrew was doing, I think like the hits and misses column about Impact. So it was just, we were both kind of doing Impact stuff. And I just remember it coming together, like no joke, within 48 hours. And Andrew and I had not even spoke until the first show. The first time we spoke together was me calling him going, hey, what's up on Mike? Like, all right, let's hit record and see what happens. Yep. And we just went off.
Yes. Yep. So check out the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Judge for yourselves if I am the million-dollar matchmaker of podcast host, because there's a lot of good shows in that lineup. And a different topic every day of the week. And you can learn about things that aren't even your passion in pro wrestling. They're just entertaining shows. But you can also really gain knowledge and be entertained by aspects of wrestling that is your passion. One of the newest shows on our lineup is the PW Torch 90s Passcast, where they talk about shows from newsletters that I wrote and edited from 30 years ago. And Alex and Patrick just do a great job with that. And they have a real fun chemistry. And they read through quotes of interviews I did with some of the pro wrestling's biggest power players and wrestlers. And they read back editorials. Batting average, I think, is pretty good on us, calling things the right way. But, you know, there are some embarrassing moments, and they're not shy about that. Things that people who were going to be stars of the future who today people haven't even heard of. But that's a real fun format. So yeah, it's free. Check it out. Everybody get VIP members get all those shows on their VIP feed with the ads and plugs edited out also. So that's a nice perk to go along with it. But check it out if you're not a VIP member with a free feed. Again, just search PW Torch and subscribe to the Daily Cast. While you're at it, subscribe to the PW Torch VIP feed, the free sample feed. We put free samples of VIP shows on another free podcast feed on a semi-regular basis throughout the month. And you can get a sample of some of the VIP exclusive shows on that feed. Including, I think it's the only place non-VIP members can hear the Fix mailbag with Todd Martin and me. We put one of those up every month or two. So subscribe to that at the same time. And within that app, you can actually upgrade and get all our VIP shows with the ads and plugs removed on that feed using your Apple account. So lots of ways to go VIP. All right. We got to get rolling here. We got a bunch of people on hold and a lot more to talk about. So let's shift to phone calls. We'll go first to Greg, I believe in Waterloo, Iowa. Greg, I think it's been a while. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy to meet you too. And Mike, it's good to talk to you for the first time. I've talked with you on email via All Elite After Show, and I wanted to say that most recent show, I appreciate your combination of both saying what I'm thinking about Vince McMahon and the chaos in WWE, while also being just critical enough of AEW to satisfy my yearning for fair criticism of both. So I appreciate that. You guys have done a good job. You've been some of the better critics of some of my concerns I have with maybe Tony Khan and some of his personality factors for quite a while now. So I appreciate that. Anyway, as far as the show tonight went, I'd say the first hour and 15 minutes was really solid. Very good. A very strong first hour and 15 minutes. So then I thought there was a bit of a things kind of declined from there. And, yeah, in the main event, as far as the match goes, I share your feelings about, like, the combination of, yeah, the great wrestling, but then the lack of story and just, like, lack of reason to care other than, hey, here's some guys who are going to have a great match. And it's the same thing with Bryan Danielson. As good as these matches are going to be, it's like, I mean, you know the matches are going to be good. We know who the winner is. Foregone conclusion. It's filling up 5 weeks of TV time, basically, until this match is made official, this Iron Man match. And so there is a bit of maybe too much of a predictability factor there. But the matches are going to be solid, but that's not the only thing that I think a lot of people look for in terms of great show. Anyway, I have one main question I want to ask you, and it's involving a segment that might have been overlooked, but it was, and this is me throwing out a potential possibility. I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on if you think this is going to happen or not, but there was a backstage segment with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, and they said they're going to be on at the Hollywood Walk of Fame on Friday. I'm wondering if something happens with Vince McMahon's Hollywood star.
I personally think AEW should stay away from that story because I think you want to take the high road on this. And I think there's going to be plenty of infighting that in WWE that you're just better off stepping away if you're AEW and just watching them go at it, you know, watching them fight it out and not do anything that might seem petty or easy. I know it's tempting. And I'm not saying there's not a way to pull it off and maybe make it work, but do you go there, Mike? Do you think you should go there? I mean, I don't know that they're going to do that. I'm not even necessarily buying in that that's likely, but it is a possibility. What do you think?
Oh, man, that's a hard one. So, like, I subscribe to the theory of it's okay to punch up, but if you're punching down, you should probably avoid it. Why give the other person attention, right?
Right.
So they would be – I mean, they'd be punching up. I mean, let's be honest. They'd be punching up, but still – this is a story that I think is so wild it could get even more wild over the next few weeks. This may be something you want to stay away from. This may be something, like you said, you may just want to sit back and say, you know what? I'll let them burn themselves down. I don't need to add any fuel to the fire. I'll sit here and let them do that themselves, and I'm going to sit here in my front row seat with my popcorn, and I'm going to watch them do it, but I'm not necessarily going to get involved. That's what I would do, but... I could see them going in the other direction.
Yeah.
Back to you.
Yeah, I think that's the correct answer, by the way. I was just throwing the possibility out there because I wouldn't be entirely surprised by that. When I heard Hollywood Walk of Fame, that's what I thought of. But, I mean, I think that's probably the right answer. Maybe this would be a modern-day example of not a perfect analogy, but D-Generation X going to Monday Nitro. Baby, I mean, not quite, but I mean, that would be maybe a parallel, like, event that took place a number of years ago, of course. But then my other point will be, I have a lot of opinions about this myself, but I'll let other people talk about it rather than just sit here and waste everybody's time saying my thoughts about it. But I'll ask you this: what were your thoughts on the that there was no Mercedes Moné, no mention of her, no follow-up to that little tease from Britt Baker? It wasn't promised, but at the same time, it's something people might have been expecting. What did you think of that, and what did you think of the match/segment that went on with the women's tag team match?
Yeah. I mean, is it unfair to hold AEW to expectations that got a little out of hand that weren't based on necessarily a lot other than maybe some wishful thinking or people, which can be dangerous in this business, connecting dots that maybe weren't meant to be connected? Or what do you think, Mike?
I think that they knew what the situation was, which is why they announced. I don't think they had any plans on announcing Tony Storm as the partner the way they did. I mean, they did last week. And I don't think that was the original plan. I think the original plan was for her to be a surprise and have the mystery partner thing play out. But I think they saw where it was going, and Tony, you know, rightfully so, said, hey, I got to get out in front of this probably and not let everybody be disappointed. That's my guess on what happened. It's also possible that they had a different idea and it just fell through, because when you announce a mystery partner, it's usually not just someone on your roster.
That's
not usually how those stories play out.
Yeah.
So part of me thinks that there may have been another plan. Maybe he was talking to Mercedes and hoping it was going to work out, and it didn't. So they just altered course, announced Tony, and went from there. But that's my guess. Either it was never the original plan, and he got out in front of it and announced Tony Storm as a partner so that nobody would have expectations, or there was another plan in place that fell through. He knew what the expectations were and got out in front of it and had Tony Storm announced just so that people weren't, you know, sitting there chanting Mercedes tonight and booing poor Tony when she gets announced because people were expecting somebody else.
Yeah, it is possible. Yeah, I mean, when the initial match was made, Tony Khan might have been thinking, hey, we're in talks, we're starting talks. Maybe this will be when it happens. If it doesn't, here's the B plan. And now we're seeing the B plan. But it did – when you announce a mystery partner for LA and, you know, the former Sasha Banks is a free agent, yeah. I mean, yeah, it absolutely could have – you know, it should have been foreseeable that people would think that. But they might have – I mean,
and Baker played into it.
And remind me of that. What did she do?
She made some sort of mention of – she said something about the boss last week. I think it was last week. It was either last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But in a promo, she made some mention of boss, and people exploded. People were like, oh, there it is. So it's like, you know, Britt Baker was almost playing into it at the same time, which I think even made people speculate even more, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Greg, anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's about it. I was about to bring up that point, and then Mike brought it up of Britt Baker saying, I'm the boss, which did cause people to buy into it a little more. But in all fairness, you know, it wasn't something that was really promised or alluded to too much outside of that reference, but it was something that had people's thoughts up. But I come out of the segment glad that Sheeta, who I think is super talented, is going to be doing something that might result in her doing more than just kind of spinning her wheels and showing up to have a good match every 2 or 3 months like she did with Jamie Hayter. So I think that's a positive. But outside of that, I guess that's about all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Greg, good to hear from you. Thanks. All right. We'll keep rolling here. If you want to give us a call, I think about the phone numbers, 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go next to Deke in Michigan. Deke, welcome to the show. What do you think about Dynamite tonight? What stood up?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Couple things. I loved your open. Completely agree with you guys there. I've been saying it kind of like Mike forever. You've heard me on here. A lot of matches. And that's all there is. No story to them. They're good matches, but no story to them. And I think the only thing I have, and last caller kind of alluded to it too, you got to be careful what you wish for when you do have storylines. Because we kind of saw it with that. I think they got out of their own control there with their Mercedes. Everybody thought it was going to be Mercedes, and it wasn't. There's no way Britt should have done the boss thing. And what was the deal, too, with didn't she give her tickets or something? Wasn't there something about giving 2 tickets? And there was no follow-up on that today at all? Am I misremembering that there, guys?
It does sound vaguely familiar. Yeah. I'd have to go back. I don't remember exactly what the line is, but that does sound familiar from within the last few weeks, right?
Yeah. Just, you know, you got to watch what they're doing there as far as the storylines. They never have, you know, sometimes there's some things that don't flow too well as far as the stories go. A couple other things about today. Again, I mean, everybody's going to like it. I'm always in the minority here. Another MJF promo that I heard in 7th grade gym class. I mean, it took this guy like 14 seconds to think of this. I mean, every single night is, hey, I banged your sister. Your mom's a hoe. I mean, every week. That's what it is. I mean, this guy, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's delivered well, but it's the same punchline every single week. And then the last thing, Adam Cole was awesome.
Pause on the MJF thing. What advice, like what sincere, earnest advice would you give to MJF, knowing what he is able to do in terms of, what, as you just said, his delivery, that would make you more of a fan of his work as a heel wrestler trying to get booed, not trying to pop you with great one-liners? Like, but the goal being, he's a heel, he wants to get booed. I've seen him at his best, but there's some things he does that I don't get or don't like. What should he lean into instead of the things you criticize?
Well, that is a great question because I've seen nothing else but that. So I don't know what else he's capable of. And the other thing that he mentioned it the other day. Oh, you guys say every opponent I have has to run a gauntlet. Well, yeah, they do. Here we are again. This guy has to fight every week. Then you know who's going to win. And I was mad they put this Takeshita out there. I'm like, well, I know he's going to lose. You know, so those are the only two things I've seen him do, so I don't know what else he's capable of. I mean, the guy can deliver the line. You're absolutely right, but, I don't know how in-depth he can get. You know, I guess maybe the one Punk promo that he did where he talked about what he had to deal with as a kid. We saw a little bit of emotion there. That grabbed people's attention, but it made him a baby face too. And, you know, is that where you want to go with him? That's a great question. That is a great question, Wade. We will have to see because, I mean, it's the same thing every week. The only other thing I had tonight,
Mike,
guys, Adam Cole.
Deke, do you mind? Deke, sorry, I stepped in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Adam Cole transition.
Go ahead.
But before I leave the MJF topic, if you're not in a hurry, well, I'm going to throw it to Mike on that. What do you think of what Deke said about MJF, and what do you think about my question for him? Is there things you'd like to see him lean into more or move away from?
Yeah, so, I mean, I agree with Deke. It is getting very repetitive just in terms of the substance of the promos. The subjects may change here and there, but it is very much the same stuff week after week. I don't know if it's an issue yet because it's still getting a reaction. I agree, like, as a viewer, it is getting a little boring for me. It is getting a little repetitive for me. But until it stops getting the heat that it's getting, I don't know that they're necessarily doing anything wrong. And as far as what else he can lean into or if he could lean into something different, we've only ever really seen him do this. So I don't know what that something different could be that he could pull off. I'm sure there's other things he could pull off. You know, I thought he did a nice job with the Punk stuff, you know, when he played up the, even with Regal, you know, I was a kid and you embarrassed me and you know, pushed me aside. Like, he was good with that type of stuff. It doesn't really play into this feud with Danielson, though. I mean, maybe a little bit if we were to bring up Regal again, but do you really want to do that when the guy's not there? We haven't really seen him do much else other than what he's doing now. It's just, so I don't know. I guess I just don't know what else he could really lean into because this has just been what he's done, you know, really, for the most part, over and over again. That style
of
promo.
I get Deke's criticism, and I think it's an issue, and I think there's things that he says that I think he'll look back on maybe and go, that was kind of immature. I wish I hadn't done that, or I was better than that. But his shtick is to, you know, be an irritant and say some of the things that Deke finds, you know, to be low hanging fruit or. Trite or derivative or, you know, whatever. I mean, I think he's self-aware he's doing that. And it's, I think he thinks it's more a feature than a flaw. And it seems to be working. I also think he just wanted to be booed. You know, I think once he started getting cheered and it kind of, you know, messed with things, the idea was let's figure out how to make sure I just get booed by everybody who's cheering me. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to.
Hey, Wade. But I think tonight was another example of him negating what you just said. He was getting cheered tonight. He's not getting booed for any of that stuff. I mean, those are lines like maybe The Rock would deliver 25 years ago that popped the crowd. Stuff like that's not going to get him booed. Not to that crowd anyway. I mean, that crowd is you know, probably 40-something-year-old people think that's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, go ahead, Deke. I don't even want to bring up Adam Cole, and we have not talked Adam Cole
yet. Yeah, just real quick on Adam Cole. He was awesome. I mean, he did a great job, and I was taken out of it. Like, personally, it didn't offend me or anything, but it was kind of strange how they had him come out and pour his heart out about everything that's happened to him, from throwing up, waking up crying, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
5 seconds after they had a match with a guy who's been out for 3 months because of a concussion, and then they started another angle with Moxley apparently getting a concussion or something after his match. I found that somewhat strange that they would do that bang, bang, bang like that. I don't know, just odd booking decision there. And again, there may be some people offended by that. I wasn't offended by it. I just thought it was like poor planning, especially with, obviously, this guy was hurt and everything going on with concussions nowadays. Right now, you got the Miami Dolphins quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, who, like, may never play again. And he's, like, 24 years old or something. So just kind of odd booking there. You know, you could have at least maybe split those segments up instead of boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. I came away from that promo thinking, okay, great, Adam Cole doesn't have to retire. But should he? Like, it just sounded awful what he's been going through. Getting up at 3 in the morning and wondering what's wrong with me and am I going to ever feel normal again? And, you know, his voice cracking as he talks about it, and he just seemed genuinely scared. And he left off the second half of the promo. The other part, which is, but then I saw professionals who said if you wait this long and if you do this and you don't do that, then you can wrestle again. I, like, came away going, Adam, don't wrestle. Like, I know it's implied he got cleared, but, like, I kind of want a little more detail on it as if I'm an Adam Cole fan, if I'm an Adam Cole, just a viewer who appreciates his talent, like, give me something that makes me understand why you're still wrestling, because it sounds like you're one bump away from going through this horrible thing again, and you want us to cheer you doing something that might not be for your own good. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, it does come across that way, and it is scary. I mean, you know, as you said, you got a lot of guys that are having a lot of concussion issues right now, including people in wrestling, but people outside of wrestling too in the NFL. Like, Tua is a big story, and how that wasn't spotted. I mean, it's nothing to joke about, and I get it. Like, it's a real life thing. You're playing into a storyline with a real life thing that actually happened, and that's fine. I'm all for that. But like you said, describing what he went through, when he's sitting there describing what he went through, and just the type of punishment that it put him through for months and months and months and months at a time, you do sit there and go, well, is even if you are cleared, like, is this the smartest thing for you to be doing? You know, and what I wonder is it going to make people uncomfortable watching him take big bumps the way that it has with some others? And I guess we get over it. Like, it happened with Danielson when he first came back. I know I used to cringe here and there watching him take big bumps, and that he's been back for such a long period of time now that does go away and it starts to feel normal again. But, you know, it's never going to feel normal when you see him take a big bump and hit his head and God forbid, get another concussion. I think, you know, if he's ever out again with another concussion, that all anyone's going to think about is his promo and think, okay, well, it progressively gets worse with the more concussions you get. So now, not only he's not just going through the same thing again, he's going through the same thing again, you know, 10% worse than it was before. It's nothing to mess around with. It does. It makes you wonder whether or not he should still be doing this. If that was the actual thing that he went through, you know?
Yeah. It was a really, really good promo, though. Like, I mean, he owned that ring. He showed that connection he has with the audience that so few people do. I mean, he's, you know, top 5%, even among just main eventers, in terms of walking into that ring. And, you know, I was talking about Moxley in the early years of The Shield, you know, Dean Ambrose. Like, when he spoke in a way that said, I deserve your attention, and then he earned it. And Cole does too. You know, there's just a swagger and a confidence to him. And to be vulnerable in front of the fans like that and to share that kind of detail and that personal stuff, I think deepen that connection. I'm really curious what the next move is for him, putting aside his health and real life humanity and concerns about him. You know, and I don't want to do that, but like, you know, realistically, at some point you kind of have to trust the doctors and the individual to make their decision. I just wish I heard a little more about that decision-making process. I think they have a fresh start with him at this point. You know, it didn't get off to a great start in terms of what people thought he could become. And it's weird, but he actually could end up being the most valuable of the big three signings from August of 2021. Brian Danielson is just at a certain level. He's certainly late in his career. He's in a main event program, pay-per-view main event program with MJF, and that's great. And we've been wanting it. Punk is gone for now. You know, there's a lot of hard feelings there. There's been no dirt shoveled on top of a grave by Tony Khan. You know, you can't rule out he might come back or be brought back. There's some people pushing for it, even more pushing against it. But he likely won't be back. So, or that's my belief. And people I talk to believe that in AEW, that he won't be back, I'm saying. Adam Cole could end up still being the most valuable person if he doesn't have, you know, a concussion issue where it's just clear, you know, or doesn't have more health effects where it's clear he just needs to hang up the tights. So I don't know. How do you feel about that, Mike, after seeing tonight's performance and that connection with the LA crowd?
Yeah, I mean, I think I absolutely agree with you. I think he very well could be, especially just where everyone else is at. And he was getting big reactions before he got hurt, too. I mean, that's the thing that I think, you know, it's easy to forget because he's been gone for such a long period of time, but he was kind of trending in that direction. He had one of the biggest reactions on his debut, you know, because no one really thought that it was coming because it was such a big surprise. Like, he was generating, you know, a big response before the injury ever happened. It felt like it stalled and he was never able to get going because he got hurt so early on into his run. We haven't really even seen what the best of Adam Cole and AEW can look like yet because he just hasn't had a chance to get there.
Deke, back to you.
Yeah, I think those are great points. I think it may be a fresh start. My only concern was, you know, it did take me out of all of what you guys just said because I was just sitting there thinking, do they take this seriously? Because they're making another head injury angle from Moxley. So are they taking this seriously? And that's all I was thinking about. And you had Danielson on the show. You had Soraya on the show, people that have been out for years. And they're back, but for every one of those, there's a Bret Hart, too, who didn't come back. So, yeah, that was the only thing. One last thing, going back to what the last caller said about the Hollywood Walk of Fame thing, I thought the same exact thing. I'm like, they're going for Vince because, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but I don't know if it was months ago, weeks ago, whenever it was, Caster took a picture in front of Vince's star, throwing the middle finger up at it, and he retweeted it this week and said, "Should I reincarnate this or something?" Yeah, that's,
you know, that's someone who's Max Caster. Let me talk to him directly here. I know you listen. No, I'm just saying, I don't know if he listens. I'm just wanted his heart to skip a beat for a second there. If you're listening, you want negotiating leverage with Tony Khan, and you're not getting it. If you're doing that to the guy who's now in charge of the one competing company that you have to negotiate against. Now, maybe Vince would like it, you know, deep down. Oh, I like that. You show that fortitude, that ruthless aggression. Give me the middle finger. I love that kid. So maybe I'm overstating things, but it does feel a little risky to do that. Going back to Tony Khan's tweet last week, suddenly a lot of people are being nicer to me. And again, I don't think Tony should have said that because, you know, I think the goal is less passive aggressiveness in AEW among people, management, and wrestlers. So, you know, don't do that, you know, but I know that's, as I talked about in the flight ship yesterday with Rich, I know that's kind of the generation and personality that Tony has, and, you know, that's his choice to make. I think it's a little unbecoming, but not a big deal. You know, and it's kind of fun. But I would suggest you not do it, but it's fun that he does it, if that doesn't sound too contradictory. But yeah, Max Caster, it's like, come on. That's like your one chance. Like, Tony's like, he can't go to Vince, so I'll offer him a little less. Like, that's human nature for a guy doling up contracts.
I don't know if he has an agent, but if he does, his agent's sitting there going, no, what are you doing?
Exactly. Yes, Yeah. But that's what's authentic about Max. Like, he's just like, oh, whatever. And, I mean, he's doing fine in AEW. I mean, Tony loves him, you know. So, I mean, he's got people love him in that company, and I think he's going to be taken care of, and I think he knows that. So, yeah. So, Deke, anything else?
No, that's it, guys. Appreciate it. As always, great show. Love you guys, and go VIP.
Thank you, Deke. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. Who else should you take advice from but Deke on where you should spend your money on wrestling content, podcasts, and otherwise? All right, let's go next to Grant in Detroit. Grant, good to hear from you again. What do you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was a pretty good show. Well, how you guys doing first before I get into that? But
good, good.
Yeah, but I thought it was a pretty good show. I think AEW's on a nice little streak. Maybe like the last 6 weeks or so, they crowd's been pretty hot. I don't know if you all noticed or not, but it definitely makes a difference in the show.
Mike.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's been a good run for them. You know, it's kind of a weird time, too. You get the holidays thrown in there, and some of the shows just aren't, you know, maybe they're just different, especially over those couple of weeks between Christmas and New Year. But, no, I agree. I think really since probably the middle of November, middle to end of November, the shows have been really good and the crowds have been really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I said it, Grant. I just think AW is almost twice as good when they have a red-hot crowd. And that's been the case from day one. Like, early on, one of their big advantage over WWE was the crowd just reacting. I think sometimes booing the some average booking or below-par booking or presentation of talent. But when somebody shows up and the crowd is just as into them as they are, it's hard if you're a new fan to not be like, well, I don't know. I don't get it yet. But this live audience thinks this person is great. So I had to keep paying attention. You know, and it just adds energy to the show too, and it elevates things that are good to very good. It elevates things that are very good to great. They had a stretch where that wasn't the case with their crowds, and they had a stretch where I think some of the shows were not as good or were below par more consistently than they than at other times. And I think they've been better. I think they've been consistently better than average for a while, Mike. I don't think we've had like great shows. I don't think, like, I'd say, oh, AEW is just on this hot streak by any means. But I think my tone might suggest they're way off from that. I don't mean that. I just don't. But I think they're having a good run. And I think just being consistently good and very good and kind of picking out some names and talent and featuring them consistently. You know, I was glad to hear Ricky Starks' music, for instance, even though I didn't like his promo tonight, or at least a good part of it. I want to see him on TV. Every week. I don't want to see Jericho on TV week, but not Starks. Like, get Starks TV time. Don't just rotate him in and out like, you know, they've been guilty of doing with stars who needed that TV time to really be established as top tier. Mike, any thoughts? Any more thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah, I think they've done a pretty good job over the last month or so. Really, it took them a couple of weeks, I think, after All Out. Everything felt like it was a little scrambled there. But as we kind of got closer to the November pay-per-view and certainly through the holidays and even through the beginning of the year with the way they've built up this show tonight, it's been good. They've had a good run of shows here.
Yeah. All right, yeah, Grant, back to you.
Actually, that the whole Ricky Starks thing is what I was – one of the things I was about to bring up. I don't know if it just seems to be a little bit of a change in philosophy of their booking, but you're seeing more of the same stars being pushed every week. You consistently seeing them now, whereas before you would see somebody for a week and then they disappear for 2 weeks. Or you would see somebody for 2 weeks and they disappear for a month. And now you sort of getting a consistent push of some of the same top names, and now you throwing Adam Cole into the mix. I think they're going in the right direction. I don't know if it just seems like a change in philosophy or what you guys think.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, again, I think they've done a better job of that, too, of just keeping the television show consistent as far as who's on TV. I thought it was interesting, you know, Tony's comments earlier today, I think it was in an interview, where he talked about how they are exploring live events.
Yeah.
It probably is because they have so many guys on the roster and a lot of guys that might necessarily not be on TV, especially lately, because they've kept kind of the TV roster relatively consistent over the last few months. So I think that's a big reason maybe why they're looking to explore live events and house shows is they've got a lot of wrestlers under contract and they want to wrestle. So if they're not going to be on TV, they got to do something.
But do people want to go to a live event to see AEW and it's the wrestlers who aren't on TV very much? Like, I know you can fill out an undercard with that, but I mean, you know, if you're going to sell tickets to a non-televised event, which has a bad name anyway, and I think house shows are, you know, can be underrated because it's a nice experience. Just watch a show that's about the wrestling without commercials and, you know, all that stuff. But it can be good. It can be bad, depending on the effort and the lineup. But AEW could put on some really good house shows, but you can't do it if you don't feature, like, at least 70% of the stars, you know, the wrestlers who are on TV regularly. Surrounding, you know, some smaller venues, and it's sort of developmental, but that sort of feels like what Dark and ROH might be about in different ways.
Could be. Or you could end up with, like, maybe a couple of, like, a main event and a semi-main event of prominent television characters, and then fill it out with some guys that are, you know, on TV here and there, but you're also just trying to get work more than anything else, too. I mean, it depends on what the venue they're running. Like you said, if you're running a smaller venue, you can get away with it.
Yeah. Grant, back to you.
All right. And, I mean, and on the opposite side, one of the philosophies that they probably need to look into maybe changing is certain wrestlers maybe need some help with their promos, because Action Andretti, that was not good at all. Like, he probably needed some bullet points or someone to walk him through the promo, because that them just throwing him out there with a mic did not work.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. Now, again, though, it's like I don't know where the blame is there. Is it on him? I don't know, because he hasn't really ever been in that spot before where he's had to deliver a promo to a live television audience. You know, it might be the first time or second time he's ever had to do that, you know? So it's like one of those things where does Tony have to be more aware and maybe script a little bit more for those guys and give the guys with more experience more leeway in unscripted promos? You don't want to script everybody, but someone in his case just doesn't have a lot of experience doing it. Like you said, either it's really firm bullet points or maybe even some scripted lines or ask him to go over it earlier in the day so you can hear what it sounds like, which I'm not always a giant fan of, but again, someone in his position, you may have to do it where he just hasn't done it much before. Something to try to iron out some of those wrinkles, because it was a very wrinkly promo. It needed to be a little more ironed and a little more polished, I think.
What was the low point? What was the high point? Mike,
I don't. Yeah.
is there anything positive you can say? And then what stood out just for you know, constructive criticism purposes as needing?
Yeah. Well, it just, like I said, it was like almost like a lack of polish. I don't even know how else to describe it. A lack of. You could tell he had never done it before. It sounded different than what a promo would normally sound like on a show of the standard of AEW Dynamite. You know what I mean?
Sure.
With the guys
yeah.
that have a lot of experience. And that's where maybe it's stuff that's during the day. You know, maybe it's stuff that you can work on during the day and do promo classes or bring somebody in. I mean, that's been done before, too, in promotions. Something to help these guys out where, especially in today's environment, they just don't have a lot of time working on promos. I mean, maybe you do if you go through WWE developmental and it's something they work on consistently. But if you're just an indie guy that gets hired by AEW and you're working dark and you're working indies and then you get called up to do Dynamite, well, I mean, when have you ever really had to cut a promo before? Maybe you've had to do it, you know, in front of a couple of hundred people on an indie show once, but you've never had to cut that television style promo before. And that's where I think they need to figure out a way to work with some guys and not just throw them on TV and say, hey, we'll figure it out. I mean, that can work with some people, but other people may need to be coached a little bit.
Sometimes it reveals something about you that is going to be hard to market in the way that you're being presented currently too. You know, sometimes it just, the way you're being presented isn't a match for your body language, facial expressions, personality, and natural cadence, and what you think is funny or or charismatic to say. Yeah, but it is something you want to work on, and you don't want to expose people in a way where they look bad when you're trying to protect them in an early stage when opinions are being formed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Grant, anything you want to add to that?
No, what y'all said makes sense. Definitely, like, it probably was his first time having to cut a promo, and that's why you probably should have went over it with him, like, because just throwing him out there with a live mic in front of national TV, probably not a good idea.
Should wrestlers be making fun of speech impediments, Mike? Is that fair
game? I would go with a no.
Yeah,
I would
go
with a no on that, but that's just me.
I think it's an easy no. Like, there's some kid out there who loves Ricky Starks, who's got a speech impediment, and Ricky made it seem like that is a defining trait that makes you a bad person, Jack Swagger, and I'm going to make fun of you. When we talk about what Tony Khan should be doing or the filtering process, I just think that's a bad judgment call. I don't think making fun of somebody with a lisp is good babyface content. I don't think you go there. It's just like, I mean, at the core of why you make fun of a heel, it should be something that they have a choice of, and they've made a bad choice that has to do with their character. And having a lisp is not anything I think less of somebody for, and I don't think it should be something we cheer someone for making fun of. I was surprised by that. I mean, maybe it works. Like, maxi pad, who cares? Like, that's caught on. You know, okay. I mean, so that worked, but that's not – there's no kid sitting out there, even an adult who's like, oh, man, really? Really, I like you, Ricky. But now if I meet you and I ask for your autograph, you're going to think, ah, look at this dummy with a lisp. Boy, what a loser he is. Like, it's about, you know, having good judgment and picking on things that matter. I mean, Hager chooses to wear a hat and make that his gimmick. Make fun of him for that. Make fun of the quality of MMA competition that he has. Make fun of the fact – you can even make fun of the fact that his peak of his career came in year one, and it's been downhill ever since. And now he just stands behind Jericho, and that's how he gets paid, by standing behind Jericho most weeks instead of actually working hard. There's things you can, and AW likes to go there. There's kind of shoot like comments you can make about him and what the perception was of him in WWE. I've had it explained in great detail from people who had power over his push, who have told me why his push dissipated. And I don't think it's like, you know, super hidden stuff. Go for that, you know, say, well, I'm toiling on the indie scene, trying to work my way to television and main events. You got gifted main events because you looked the part and had the pedigree, and you screwed it up every step of the way. And now you're a glorified bodyguard standing. You're Bob Orton to Roddy Piper. Like, whatever. I mean, and Bob was a great worker. That'd be like, but nevertheless, you know what I mean?
Think
through a better example than that, but like, you're a guy standing behind the star instead of the star, and you can cut that promo.
Exactly.
But no, you make fun of a lisp, really? I was disappointed in Ricky for that. Anyway, Grant, anything else for us?
The only thing else I had was, so from here, do you see them booking Adam Cole as a babyface, and who would top names be for his first few back, and what are they going to do with Kyle O'Reilly? And I'll let y'all go.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
My guess is he'll be booked as a babyface, just because I think the promo tonight was an effort to get some sympathy and to kind of tell a story. It felt like a promo that was meant to get people on his side, not to push people away from him. So, yeah, my guess is that they'll book him as a babyface. I think, you know, he'll eventually, probably in relatively short order, like at some point this calendar year, I would imagine we'll challenge MJF for the title, just because he's a fresh babyface on the show and they don't have a lot of those. So that's where I think they'll go with him. That's just my guess. But, yeah, it didn't feel like he came out of that promo tonight as someone that they're going to be booking in a direction that they want people to dislike him.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's keep rolling here. We'll go to, man, the show's flying by. I've been looking at the clock. We'll go to Scott Long Island next. Scott, great to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, what's up, fellas? You know, it's funny. Like, I tried to, like, enjoy AEW more this week just because I feel like the Fed turned heel on me the last few days. So I went into tonight trying to enjoy it more. And Wade, you describe it better than anyone, man. It's just sugar rush booking. It's just like, let's go for the big pop, the big moment, the big move, and the big this. And then it's fun, and then it's over, and it's just like, I don't really remember anything, but I had a good time, and it's just, you know, it's definitely...
That's a great way to put it.
Oh, my God.
And we didn't even talk about the biggest, most important part of the show, the best tag team name of all time, Jungle Hook. Let's keep that a thing. That will sell shirts, I'm sure. No, but you know, the tough thing with them for me, is, for real, is like, the two guys on that show that I'm really into right now are Swerve and Takeshita. And right now, if I said over the next 8 weeks, I saw those guys a combined 6 more times, 7 more times on TV, or literally once combined, I can convince myself either way is true, and that I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I think, what people have come to expect, Mike, from AEW.
Yeah, it's what's been going on so far. I mean, really, with the exception of maybe the last couple of weeks where the TV roster has been kept pretty consistent, that's kind of been their MO. People get pushed for a while, and you think they're going somewhere, and then they vanish, and you will see them again in April. That's happened more than once, so it wouldn't be a big shock. I hope it doesn't happen, but yeah, it's just history would. You have a right to be concerned, given their history.
Yeah, yeah. What else, Scott?
And yeah, like I was really into Hobbs, and then they started. He's one of the only people on the show, I think, that actually gets vignettes, even though they're like 10 seconds and talks about a book. But at least he gets them. But it's been like 3 months or something, and now it's like, all right, what, you know? Like, I remember he like feuded with Starks, and Starks has moved on, and where is he now? You know what I mean? Like, and if I'm now getting into Swerve, and we don't even know what one of the dudes' name is, and he has one more squash match, but then he's off until after the next pay-per-view. Then he loses, you know, for the next 10 guys, Tony has the book. And it's just, that's the one part. But like I said, it's, I mean, just my guess, obviously, I don't know anything. But I just feel like within, I don't know, let's say a month, 2 months at the most, I think Vince is going to be booking for WWE. And I think it's going to be boring, and they're going to be layoffs, and it's going to be ugly. So I'm trying to enjoy AEW a little bit more. Just preparing myself for that, but that's just the one part of the show that, you know, it's fun and I enjoy it, but we've all talked about it. The stories are secondary. But I do like, I'll tell you one thing, I do like the originals having all, like, basically taking all the ROH belts off the last few weeks. The crowds are hot. The originals have the titles. That's interesting to me. I like that. That's important, and I think they went back and rethought that, and, you know, I give them credit for at least, like, we all noticed that was a problem and then clearly addressing it.
Mike, yeah, what do you think about that, kind of the big picture state of things?
I think overall they're heading in an okay direction. It's a roller coaster. It always is. I'm still getting a chuckle out of the Sugar Rush booking comment. It was good. I had fun.
Wade.
I don't really remember
it. That's Wade. I stole that from Wade 100%.
No, I know, but it's right on. A lot of the times it's right on. You know, I would even describe the show tonight like that. So there's stuff. I mean, there's stuff that I would love to see better. I mean, I've said this even on our live cast show. There are times when I watch the show and I still feel like, you know what, I was sold a bill of goods that I'm not getting, you know, credible sport like wrestling. And it's like, here we are 3 years later or whatever it is, a little over 3 years later. And it's not really what we're getting all the time. You get glimpses of it here and there, but it's not what we're getting all the time. So I would like them to kind of find a consistent vision. I would like to see them integrate more story. I mean, the matches are great. So I'm not saying don't have great matches. I said that earlier. But find a way to inject more layered storytelling into what you're doing, and I think the show will be more interesting. And there's angles where you could tell that they're trying to do that, and then there's other angles with specific talent that just feels like we're going to go out there and we're going to do 100 spots, and it's going to be great, and people are going to cheer, and they're going to say fight forever, and we're going to go off the air, and that's what we're going to do, and we're going to do the same thing every week. I mean, I wish they would find something a little more consistent within every segment, you know what I mean? So that every segment had some sort of story being told, because I agree with what you said earlier in the show, Wade. There's a million more people out there somewhere, and that's how you're going to hook them, because clearly what they've done over the last 3 years has been good. You know, it's about a million people. It's good, but there's still more people you can go out there and get. And for whatever reason, they haven't grabbed those other people yet. So you got to try to change up the tone somehow in an effort to try to grab those people because they're there.
Yeah. I mean, if they don't want them because they just want to do things the way they've always done them, I mean, then fine. You know, he doesn't have, quote, stockholders to answer to or investors to answer to like Vince McMahon does. So we can do that. I mean, they're 4 out of the last 5 measured weeks, because it takes, a couple weeks to get these numbers, they've drawn more than 1 million fans after 3 days of DVR viewership. So they have about 1 million people watching them, watching Dynamite in the United States. And yes, that counts streaming services. Yes, it counts watching on TNT or TBS on the app. People get confused by that. Nielsen basically just knows what show you watch, and you get credit no matter how you watch it. And, we can criticize whether their sample size is big enough to not have variation, but if you look at a large sample size, you're looking at a pretty good estimation of how many people are watching the show. And they got 1 million people, but they had about 1 million people a year ago. They had about 1 million people 2 years ago. They had about 1 million people 3 years ago. CM Punk gave them a boost, and then when he was gone, and they pushed a Japan show, and they pushed the ROH brand, they took a hit. They had other injuries. I've written, extended longer articles on this in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter for VIP members about their ratings and kind of putting in real perspective, what the ebb and flow is and what correlates to it. But that's sort of not small ball, but it's like that's on the fringes of if not for Punk's injury, they would be better off. The larger arc should be how do we promote a style and promote our brand and create an identity that brings more people in through word of mouth or keeps people when they see advertising during NBA games and all the plugs that WarnerMedia gives them. There's people every week who are watching what I've watched before. And all they're doing is replacing people who get disgruntled or lose interest. And you want to outpace that. Now, the counter argument to that always is, hey, fewer and fewer people are watching cable or a lot of people are cutting the cord. But a big percentage of the people who are cutting the cord on cable are subscribing to YouTube TV and Sling TV and DirecTV Stream. And Hulu Live TV. And they get TNT still. They get TBS still. And they're still watching. It's not a complete replacement. But you've got to outpace those things. And, they're not. They're just kind of holding steady. And I just genuinely think there's things they could be doing without turning away anybody who's already watching to make the show add more viewers. And, it's a lot of the little things, including having some editing of some of your promos. Not saying let's script everything, but run this by a couple people before you. We have an email in the Ricky Starks thing too. I'll expand more on that. Andretti, just coming across as rather unlikable in his promo. And Green, and yeah, it's just like those are little things. And so is having matching ring apron to your new stage in time. Again, it's not a big deal, but like when there's dozens of things every month that are just really little things here and there that if you put that effort in or have a bigger staff to kind of help, it really does matter to enough people, I think, to change the trajectory of your viewership. And part of it is going back to the topic. Let's hear from the Bucks and Kenny. Who are they? How do they feel? We don't know. We just know that they're indie darlings and Japan darlings. That's it. And that's all that matters. Yay, Observer Awards. Yay, 7 stars. But, how about everybody else watching your show and everyone you're trying to attract? Who are they? There's nothing. There's no story being told about who Kenny Omega is. Zero. For months, years maybe, on Dynamite. There's nothing about Kenny Omega that's been a story that's been told. He pretended to be more hurt than he was, or was he, when he first came back. That was supposed to be a story, but they never told it. Mike, honestly, am I overstating it? Do we know anything about the Bucks and Kenny? For all the time that they've been in AEW, let's just limit it to the last, with Kenny, I know he's out for a long time, so it's kind of, in that sense, unfair. But the last year or two, what's happened? And then compare that to what you can say about Sami Zayn. You can say it about, there's people you don't even want to say it about, like Baron Corbin. There's all kinds of things we know about Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
We don't want to, but we do. Why can't we get some of that with Kenny in the Bucks, who we want to know more about? We want to...
I know more about Elias and his brother than I do about Kenny Omega.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just they shouldn't be the elite. They should be resting. I don't want to say it. I'd say resting on their laurels, but that's actually the wrong phrase and unfair because they're not resting on their laurels. They're just balls out putting their bodies on the line, and they're mega talented. But they're leaning on their claim to fame instead of expanding. If I had more time, I could come up with a better catchphrase. But, you know, expand. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm open to suggestions.
No,
go ahead.
No, but all I was because it kind of blends into what I was saying. Like, don't you think that kind of plays into, instead of having Dynamite where you have 20 people on and you're trying to get over 18 people, which is impossible, maybe, because, like, they have the ability to naturally, like, organically get people over. Jamie Hayter got over. The Acclaim got over. Ricky Starks is now getting over. Like, Darby Allin got over. They have people that most people, including myself, never heard about. MJF got over. Like, they have guys and women that get over, and the crowd gets it. Like, their million people are loyal, and they'll give a chance. So instead of, if you focus on less people and really give the audience to attach to something and keep pushing them, then they turn into stars instead of getting sick after 2 weeks and then signing the next WWE guy and going. It's just, if they just focused a little more, the crowd's willing to really put themselves in it, which is the frustrating part. And I think that million is there for them. They're just a little bit off, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Scott, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, the last thing I'll say, MJF, hometown hero, obviously. You said, what can he do, like, his promo-wise? I think he just has to be more personal. Instead of acting all mad and snapping, he could always just get, like, really talk to Brian or whoever he's feuding with and say that thing that's like, oh, he really went there kind of thing. Like, you know, like, instead of just saying brain damage, Brian, like, he can really go into that kind of stuff to make people think, like, oh, yeah, this guy really is an ass. And, like, you know, he has that ability to – he's funny, he has delivery, but he also can get serious to where he'll get booed. So he could – and he always pulls that out. He does that consistently. But he's the man, and when he's here in April, he will be cheered like absolute crazy because he's the only champion we have. Good night, guys. I'll catch you next time.
All right, thanks, Scott. Take care. Are you still there, Scott?
Yeah, I'm here.
How's Zach Parise doing?
Zach Parise is having an amazing year. His dad, you may know, JP Parise was on the Islanders, so he always wanted to play here. Then, I actually ran into him at a Starbucks like a week ago. He's awesome. They're all awesome guys. They're in the community. But, he made all his money with you guys, and he plays with us on the league minimum, so it worked out perfectly.
We're glad he's not on our team anymore because he was always three steps behind our fast players. But he had good years here, but it just wasn't a good fit. And the coaching staff was, you know, and he actually wasn't good for the locker room. But he seems like a nice guy. But, like, it was time for a change is kind of what it come down to.
Yeah.
But I've been happy to see from afar his stats are good because I'm not rooting against him doing well for you guys. If he was, you know, on the Chicago Blackhawks, I would be.
I'm actually going to the game tomorrow. They're playing the Wild, and my birthday is on Friday, so I figured I'd go tomorrow. So tomorrow night, hopefully the Isles. You know what? Hopefully the Isles win in overtime, so you guys get your points. So, and hopefully Zach Parise scores the game winner. Just think of me.
Well, the last time he played for the Wild was during our playoff series, the last year he was with us, and he got scratched. He was a healthy scratch for the first few games, and then we finally played him, and he scored a goal, and all the fans were like, "See, we told you." But, anyway, we're boring people.
Keller, if you ever want to start a hockey podcast, let me know.
I'm pretty unqualified, to be honest, but I can talk a little Wild and a little Zach Parise with you, but I've kind of, right. I think I'd be out of podcast talk now.
I think it'd be more interesting than it'd be better than listening to more of what's going on with Vince McMahon for a day. No, I'm just kidding. All right, have a good night, guys. You guys are awesome.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, you're out of luck if you don't want to hear about Vince McMahon anymore because he's injected himself back into our topic list for better or for worse.
I think he'll be there for a while too.
Maybe. I mean, you know.
I think he'll be a topic of conversation for a while. I don't know if he'll be with the company for a while. He'll be a topic of conversation for a while.
I mean, I think he will probably be with the company for a while, and he will probably be on headset at WrestleMania this year, and that I know sucks to hear for a lot of people. But it's not guaranteed, and there are cards to be played. One got played today. Anyway, that's a topic for another show. Go listen to yesterday's flagship, everybody. Rich and I had a lot to say. All right, we'll go to Bryant in Boston. Bryant, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good to hear it. I thought the show was pretty good overall. I mean, other than the only bad segment was that stupid best friends segment. That was really the only part that I didn't like very much. But I don't know if anybody's brought this up yet, but I'm a little disappointed that Mercedes Vernado, a.k.a. Sasha Banks, wasn't on the show. And I just feel like they could have done a bit more to, you know, to make sure that, because apparently the word is that the crowd, the lights went out for a time after the women's match, and then the Rampage logo came out, and the crowd started booing like crazy, and I guess the crowd, like, got cut off because of that. But, yeah. You know, I'm just wondering, I'm just wondering, I know you probably haven't heard anything way on that situation, but do you, I mean, it's pretty clear to me that she's not going back to WWE ever, to be honest, because Vince is back in charge there, and I don't think
it's
going to
happen with Paula back in charge either. There are powerful people. I know it's not popular with people who really like her when I say this, but I'm just reporting what I'm told. I'm not saying she's at the CM Punk level of unpopular with fellow wrestlers and management, but she has her critics. And the details I've been given mean she's, you know, indicate she's earned it. And if Tony Khan did his due diligence and then she had to deal with her in negotiations, you know, if it got that far, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm just not. And I know people want her to be, you know, people who are fans of her want her to be in AEW and show up Vince McMahon, but it's just, you're getting a lot. There's a lot that comes along with negotiating and working with her. And, I mean, some of the people whose opinions I respect the most who I talk to from WWE are not sad she's gone, and they don't think she should be brought back, and they don't buy the spin that this was women standing up for their rights. They, you know, against misogynistic, you know, sexism and what. It's like and there's women in that company who tell me this, by the way. Like so, but I know people really like don't like hearing that. I'm neutral on it. I don't. Like, care either way. I just want to convey what I hear and what I think is fair and trusted commentary on her. And so I'm not shocked that Tony Khan didn't bend over backwards to make sure that happened. And I'm also not surprised that Paul Levesque didn't either.
Well, do you see this as a situation where maybe Khan anticipated having her for the for tonight, but maybe they're just in the middle of negotiations or something? Because I tend to think that Khan's perfectly willing to pay her what she's asking for, but I think the thing is he wants like some sort of a commitment to her, from her, like 2 to 3 years, and I'm guessing that's probably something she's reluctant to do. So I'm just wondering, do you think it's that sort of situation going on?
No. I don't think it's the length of contract that would stop a deal from happening either side. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I think if Tony wants her, he would sign her to a multi-year deal that she'd be happy with. You know, he signed just about everybody he wanted. If he wanted her, he'd sign her. I mean, she wants to be in wrestling. She's in wrestling. Unless I misunderstood your question, Brian, I think if Sasha was asking for something reasonable and Tony really wanted her, they'd have a done deal.
So you're probably thinking she doesn't end up in AEW after all?
My inclination right now is that she doesn't, but I'm not saying she won't. So I think if a deal was going to be made, maybe there was some reason, maybe they're great. They're like texting each other all the time and they have all kinds of ideas and it's just a matter of time and tonight wasn't the night. And I don't know that's not true, but I don't think that's likely the case. And just again, based on if Tony does his due diligence on why some of the feelings in WWE about her and some of her colleagues, I just think he might think twice about meeting what are likely really high demands from her and her view of what her worth to AEW would be. And I think she'd be really valuable to AEW. But I don't know if she's not asking for more than her value. But again, I mean, this is pure conjecture based on what I'm told about how people feel about her. You know, it's three steps removed from reporting. You're asking for my opinion or my guess, and that's what I'm giving you. I just want to frame it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't help that there's been like a lack of really any useful information on it. I mean, like, it's kind of emblematic as to how difficult it is to report on the wrestling world, because we saw that last night with the WWE being sold to the Saudis reporting. And personally, I think that's probably still going to happen, but it just hasn't been locked in yet. But you know, I'm not gonna spend any time talking about WWE because I could give less of a care about it. Because you know what, they sold their soul to the devil, and you know what, if they want to go down that road, that's on them. All the more power to them. I don't care. I stopped watching WWE 4 years ago, and I feel more vindicated than ever about that. But anyway, let me get to the actual show itself.
okay.
I thought what I was. There was one promo segment that I really liked. The MJF segment was freaking hilarious. I was laughing my ass off during that. He finally brought up the big bugaboo about Takeshita's last name. And I thought that was pretty funny. I'm a big fan of bathroom humor, just not Vince McMahon bathroom humor. It's fine on wrestling if it's used within reason. And MJF kind of did that. And I don't know. I just think he was, like, how he called Freddie Prinze Jr. a Scooby-Dooby douchebag. that was hilarious. He was on fire tonight. I thought maybe it went a little long, but he's hitting on all cylinders, so I thought that was good. And the show from start to finish, other than that one backstage segment I mentioned, was pretty good. I wish they'd move the women's segment away from that spot, like the spot of death, so to speak. I mean, just put them in the first hour or something. You don't want the crowd to be dead during a women's match. You know, just put them in the first hour. That's been proven to work. But just wondering what you guys' thoughts were on the women's match. And Mike, I completely agree with you about Vince McMahon being a piece of you-know-what. I think WWE is, I don't know if they'll ever go completely out of business, but I think they're taking a huge, huge fall from grace. I wouldn't be surprised if in a few years they were the distant number two in this case and the rules were reversed.
Thanks, Brian. I'll talk about the women's match placement in a second, but Mike, briefly, because I talked for an hour and a half with Rich yesterday about it on the flagship. I don't know that I have a ton more to add, and I think my view on this came across in terms of just kind of what a sad situation this is on a number of levels within WWE, and it, through the lens of wrestlers who felt that they were getting a fair shake and now might not. Management who I think felt that Stephanie and Paul Levesque put together really good teams and were building something special that's now getting dismantled. And Vince McMahon's just callous disregard for his daughter and, what she had been essentially groomed for, or what she thought she was being groomed for decades, and his inability to step aside when it was in the best interest of the company, the shareholders, the wrestlers, the fans, and decide, nope, I got to be there. And even if it ruins everything, if I can't play, I don't want anyone having fun playing, whatever. It's I'm trying to think of an analogy. You know, I'm going to break the tennis. I'm going to break the baseball bat if I don't get to be at bat. But in his mind, he might think he's a hero who's going to save things. I think his motivation is, I don't care about anyone. And I think he admits this to himself. Like, I don't care about anyone but me, because this is my company and I want to be there to pitch the ninth inning of Game 7 of the World Series of this journey that I've been on for 40 years. And I don't care what it does to my daughter. And yeah, but it's awful, from a family standpoint. And Stephanie is pure and perfect in terms of everything she's done in her contributions to the business. But in this situation, I think it's just like so clear cut what this says about the legacy of Vince McMahon, which I'm told he doesn't care about.
Across.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't care what decent people think about him. He just wants to do what makes him feel good in this moment and grab more power and be in the game. I mean, that's my take on what's going on right now. And I think it's I think it's crushing Stephanie, who was as loyal to him, I believe, as anybody for so long. I took a picture of them together 25 years ago. I think it was at the I think it was at the Jesse Ventura SummerSlam press conference. And you know, I thought Vince, and I said, can I take a picture of you and Stephanie? And Stephanie said, sure. And they post. It's a, I've run it on the website multiple times. It's like, it's like this. Now it's just heartbreaking. I mean, to see where, what he just did to his daughter. And I for people to think, oh, Stephanie resigned because there's a sale. It's like, she resigned because she's broken because her dad did this. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to talk about it. No, I just did for 5 minutes. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's very clear what was happening. And it's interesting. You know, Andrew and I talked a little bit about this last night on our show. She had not resigned before and come back. She was on a leave of absence.
Yeah.
This time, she completely bypassed leave of absence and just flat out resigned, which means I'm not coming back. I'm done. There's a
difference. And her statement said the founder, not my dad. She listed what she loved about WWE and who she's going to miss. She listed everybody but her dad. Like, Rich and I parsed every sentence of that thing, and you know they put a ton of thought into that. Go ahead, Mike.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it is a little – I mean, again, she hasn't been innocent throughout the course of her career, obviously. But I go back to every time you see her interviewed about her dad in any type of setting. WWE interview or a non-WWE interview, you can tell that it's pretty genuine that she adored, and I said that I'm using the past tense there on purpose, at least at the time of those interviews it was present, but she adored her dad. Like, her dad was her hero. It was very clear. I mean, she did not, and I don't think she was trying to hide that emotion, but it came across anytime she talked about him. So for this to happen, I mean, I'm sure it's crushing. It must be. And especially just knowing how it happened, too. I said this to Andrew last night. The idea, and again, it's Wall Street pitch. It's PR. It's what they're telling people to – it's what Vince has come up with as a reasoning for why he had to come back. Right down to the, I'm not going to sign off on a sale and I'm not going to sign off on a media rights deal if I don't negotiate it. So what's he going to do, put his company into bankruptcy?
Yeah.
Because what are they going to do without a media rights deal? If they don't sell and they don't have U.S. distribution – they're going to go out of business. So he's going to take this company, of which he owns the majority share, of which makes up the bulk of his net worth, and he's going to tank it on purpose because he didn't negotiate the deal? I said it to Andrew last night. I go, if he's actually willing to do that, he's one of the dumbest people on the planet. He's one of the dumbest person on the planet. Or maybe he has enough in cash that it doesn't matter to him. I don't know. But it's just, it's so selfish. I mean, that's the one where, this is what I keep coming back to, just it's incredibly selfish. Because let's say he would do that. You know, I don't care. Like you said, if I can't have it, nobody can. And I'm gonna let it just die if I can't be a part of it. That's incredibly selfish. Especially when you've groomed your daughter for so long to take over. And then to essentially strong arm her out, even though, you know, I know he didn't come in and say Stephanie had to resign. She did that on her own. It was the way that it was done. You know,
I was told Stephanie would have likely stuck around, and still, for the sake of loyalty to the family, if it didn't become impossible for her to stick around. And that's not to say that Vince ordered her to leave, but Vince would have had to have been. You know, I don't know. I mean, you can imagine. You know what it would take if certain things had to be done and said that just caused her to go, I'm not even going to wait a week. I mean, think about that. She didn't even wait a week. The timing of
hours.
Yes. Like, I mean, even if she just was like, oh, I want to go be a mom. Like that could possibly be the story. Like, oh, yeah, well, now that my dad's back, they don't need me anymore. I was just doing this out of loyalty to the brand, but I didn't enjoy it. No, she loved it.
And less than 24 hours before, they were being very clear in public comments, the company was, saying that her and Nick Khan were still the co-CEOs.
Yes. So
there was
what
no
happened?
Indication that she was going anywhere.
Yes. So what happened in the hours and in less than a week since the Vince announcement to cause her to think, okay, Dad, you don't need me, and this is a lot, and I got other things I want to do, but I know it'll look better if I wait a month or wait 2 weeks. Like, of course that's what you do. You don't step away within a week without wanting to send the world a message. yeah, that this was an untenable situation for me. So, yeah. All right.
And then just on a complete aside, but related, when it comes to the, you know, I know the report last night about the Saudis ended up not being correct, but I mean, they are one of the few people, or one of the few organizations, for lack of a better term, that could afford to buy the company. It has to be terrifying to some people that work within the company. And I'm going to take the morality issues out of it. Just looking at it from a business standpoint, if you take the moral issues out, which is really hard to do, but let's be honest. But just putting that and setting it aside for a moment, that public investment fund is worth, I think I saw last night, $626 billion. So even if they spend $8 billion on WWE and they grossly mismanage it, and in 3 years they go out of business, it's not even a drop in the bucket. They're not even going to care. So it's like now you're going to have an organization that owns the company that if they make decisions and say, we're going to change this and this and this, and it's going to become, and we're going to be, and to the extent, I saw somebody say today, like, let's say this actually comes to pass. Will NBC or Fox want to negotiate a business deal with the government of Saudi Arabia? They may not want to. Look at the LIV Golf Tour and how much issues they've had getting that on television just because it's somewhat Saudi-backed. They may not care. They don't care. They have all the money in the world. So that has to be terrifying, even if you are okay with working for them. Like if you're a wrestler or an employee in that company going, you know what, I'm okay with this. I can work even if they're the owners. They could grossly mismanage this thing to the point where they just say, you know what, it's not worth it. We're going to close it down. And we lost our $8 billion investment. We have $626 billion. It doesn't matter. That's a real possibility.
Yeah. I don't want to get too far ahead of things on the Saudi story because I think they're reporting. I think the reporting on it was premature. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But I don't see anything reliable that says either of those things is true. I see something being reported prematurely that then got blown way out of proportion over the course of a few hours that everybody that I talked to who's been right about everything so far said isn't happening. At least not imminently. I didn't want to be the person to go, everybody is wrong, because who am I to know if they don't have information I don't have? But we sat back. I told the staff that asked me, we're not talking about this because I don't think this is going to happen. And we don't have any reporting on it. And I don't trust the reporting that's out there on it, not only based on how it was presented, which did not come across as a multi-source vetted story with someone, you know, that actually was backed up with an actual article in journalism. But I'm hearing the opposite. So
and it's crazy how many people did pick up on it, though, because I saw it on Yahoo. Someone sent me a link to a Yahoo news story.
Exactly.
Granted, they had cited this report, but, you know, in your head, I'm sitting there going, okay, yeah, they're citing this report. But, I mean, Yahoo's a pretty big organization. I have to – in my head, I'm going, they must have some sort of background on this before they're just going to run this thing. I mean, what are they going to just run any old report that they get and start, you know, Yahoo News doesn't usually just pick up on stuff like that.
I don't think
that's what sent me the link. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think the standards for corporate branded mainstream reporting, the standards for pro wrestling stories are great. And I think others, you know, I think the term clickbait is overused because I think oversimplified, but I think the desire to satisfy your editor with a story that gets a lot of clicks when you have some plausible justification for running a headline that's going to get people to click on it is what drives headlines that show up on Yahoo News on your phone when you scroll to the left and get that news feed or swipe to the left. So, you know, we just had something that got out of control. And I just think, you know, and I don't want to impugn knowledge to impugn the reporting that went into it, but what I saw was not a journalistic story published with a byline and context. It seemed like somebody without a lot to lose and a lot to gain if they were right, but not a lot to lose if they were wrong. And I just felt – and then a bunch of people being cute about it, wanting to act like they knew but they couldn't say anything in case it turned out to be true. That's what led to and I just tuned it out. I was being told, you wouldn't believe how much is happening online about this because everyone's just texting me and messaging me about this. And I'm like, ignore it. It's going to go away. And tomorrow people will know. So anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, where it's like they're it sounds believable too, because they're one. I mean,
yeah,
they're one of the only outfits out there that can afford to buy it. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it would make sense if Fox or NBC bought it, just because, you know, they're going to spend a few hundred million on the TV rights, so they can, you know, spend, you know, four TV deals worth of money and just own the thing. I mean, that makes sense. There's not a lot of buyers out there that can afford to buy it.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of stuck. I mean, maybe there's someone that's going to come out of the woodwork that we've just never heard of before. But yeah, I look at this on the surface and think there's a limited group of groups that are willing or have the cash to buy this thing.
And I say this a lot. I am not particularly interested in worrying about ultra-rich, powerful people getting even richer and more powerful by a degree of 20 or 40, and then fretting as if that matters to the world or my life or the end goal, which is to please fans. Like, I'm not saying I don't care and I won't report on it, but like, if WWE stays a public company and signs another big TV deal and it's 20% less than they wanted, who gives anything
yeah.
about that? Like, I don't like who settle down, everybody. That doesn't matter. Like, so Vince is going to have that much more money he can never spend. Like, who cares? Like, this is,
I know.
I mean, I can't get excited about this. Some people are like, oh my God, WWE's going to make 30% less because they did this and they did that. It's like, I don't swear in the show, but like, and I don't feel like I want to very often, but right now I kind of do. Like, who gives a flying fuck? I mean,
I agree. So the stock price is going to go down. Okay.
Who cares? It doesn't matter. They're either going to have $16 billion or $22 billion. It doesn't matter to your life. I guarantee there's not a person listening who it matters to them at all. So why spend time reading stories about it, whether WWE makes 30% more or 30% less on their next TV deal? And there's reporters who are worked up about this. It's like, just let it happen. Who cares? They're going to stay in business. The wrestlers are making more money than they've ever made in the top half of the roster, and really the bottom half are making good money, working fewer dates than ever, and that's going to continue unless they blow so bad they go out of business. And that might happen, and then there'll probably be another startup. But I don't care if they sell the company for however many tens of billions of dollars or whatever it is. Why have people worked up about it? What'll happen will happen, and there's going to be some rich people who are either a little less rich or a little more grotesquely rich than they would have been otherwise. Who cares? It's not that big of a story. Just what matters is the end product for the fans. And there's going to be, in all likelihood, a WrestleMania, regardless of who owns the company. And it's either going to be Paul Levesque or Vince McMahon in charge of the creative. And there's going to be some shareholders who have enough money to care, who are either going to be happy or sad for a couple of years based on how much more money they have that they can't spend, so they can buy houses with more rooms that the housekeeper sees more of than they do. I don't care.
Yeah, unless you're a fan that has poured all of your retirement into WWE stock, why do you care what the stock price is? I've said that for a long time. Well, who cares?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we'll follow it because it means like it tells you what the company's worth, I guess. But it doesn't affect my accounts at all. So what do I care? Like,
yeah.
I haven't wrapped up my money in WWE stock. I'm sorry. I don't know if other people have.
And I'm gonna I'm gonna report on it when it happens. But like, I'm just not invested in, you know, whatever conglomerate or, you know, I mean, if Saudi Arabia interests buy it, that's a huge story with a ton of ramifications, and it's going to be a morality check on the TV networks that deal with them. And it could lead to a lot of stories that people, you know, would rather not deal with, and it's going to cause some fans to not watch the product anymore on a much larger scale. Maybe not enough to matter, but maybe so. But, like, settle down, everybody. You know, the next TV deal is going to be huge. And if it's a TV deal that we don't hear the number because a TV conglomerate buys them, and so they're not paying for it anymore, they just bought it, or if they just get a TV deal and it's in their publicly traded company, you find out how much it is. It's going to be a lot of money. But I don't care if it's a little bit more, a little bit less than last time or what people's, quote, expectations are. Who cares? Go do
it. It's like me getting upset as a baseball fan. Yeah, I get aggravated when I have to listen to the owners of the Red Sox talk about how they're not going to go over the luxury tax. And I'm like, it's not my money. I want you to re-sign Xander Bogaerts. Like, don't tell me you can't afford your free agents. You're the richest franchise in baseball. What, you might have to go over the luxury tax and spend a little bit extra? Like, get over it.
Yeah.
It's the exact same way. It doesn't affect me. I want to watch a winning baseball team. Same thing. I want to watch good wrestling. I don't really care who owns it.
And that's the thing. What matters is a decision made that is going to possibly cause WWE to go out of business or lead to a change in management that could affect the product negatively. And that matters. But like the idea of, well, you know, if Fox renews SmackDown, boy, I'm going to sit here and analyze whether they're going to make 20% more than their last deal or 15% less. Who cares? It's going to be a lot of money. And I know it's not fair. Yeah. Some people, that's their niche. But it's just like, it's either going to be fine or it's not. But like when you, once they made that Saudi money, so many other things just stopped mattering that used to matter when it came to decisions on a week-to-week and month-to-month basis. Once Peacock paid a flat fee for pay-per-views, it changed the game. I mean, they're playing to a different audience than they used to, and it's all about the shareholders now. It's not about the fans.
That's all. Yeah.
It's all
that matters.
I know. Yes. All right. Let's get back to probably some AEW talk here. We'll go to Bryant. We'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Go to Ryan. What have you got for us?
Heavy question on the Elite. They seem to be a very sometimes they're picky on like who they want maybe do jobs to. So do you think it's more likely that they would do a job to a team led by Adam Cole and say like a couple of his buddies, or do you think even CM Punk and the FTR could be the ones to take the title, or is there someone else on this one that could potentially beat them?
Yeah, what do you think of that, Mike?
They haven't really built up any other trios teams other than these two.
That can't be true. We just had 2-3 months of this best of seven series. So obviously they've been building up the next opponents, Mike. Who is it? Don't tease us. Don't lie.
Who could it be? I mean, I guess they could throw just someone in there with Jungle Hook, and that could be a new team. I don't really know.
And Trent and Chucky T.
Hey, maybe next week they'll get along and all that weird tension won't actually exist and we'll just forget about it and never explain it. We could do that too. I don't really know. I don't know. I guess it could be Adam Cole, although I think they probably have higher aspirations for Cole as a singles.
That's a problem.
Week
the
from
trios
now,
title
that could change. I don't know.
The trios title. Yeah. Well, if the idea is work 6 trios matches, so you take fewer bumps, so we can get your promos and your charisma, but not put you at risk. Okay, do it. But one of the problems with the trios championship is it creates another division that, to get people to care about it, has to hoard talent that should be adding depth to the tag team and singles divisions, because there's, you know, how many singles belts? So, yeah.
The downside. Too many.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Ryan, back to you.
I have a question on something you were talking about, AEW house shows. What I don't understand is, how was Impact able to deliver pay-per-view caliber house shows, at least the ones I went to? And you acted like AEW would have some issues getting their top guys to work them, because it seems like they work a pretty late schedule so far. In the 3 years they've been in business, like 30 to 20 matches a year. I think they could, you know, do at least 40 matches a year, 50.
I somehow missed your question. Is it about house shows, Ryan? Is that what you said?
Yeah, you said earlier in your ran about house shows for potential for AEW that they'd have to rely on people that aren't on TV, but the house shows I went to for Impact were usually like pay-per-view caliber.
No, you don't have to repeat your whole question. I just need a clarification on the beginning. Mike said he thought that it'd be good because they have a deep roster, not me, to run house shows, because then the talent that's not on TV can get work. And my comeback was, I think people want to pay money to see house shows featuring the wrestlers who are on TV, and I think it'd be a bad strategy if they're only creating house shows to give ring time to people who aren't on TV. I don't think that is how you framed anything, Ryan, so do you want to rephrase your question or clarify to me what you meant?
Well, I'm just saying when Impact ran their house shows, it seemed like a lot of times you had even trouble getting tickets, like in Hagerstown, which is like an hour down the road, they would sell out, so I think AEW could be very successful running house shows if they used who was on TV, like Impact did like 7-8 years ago.
I think the key for them would be to go to markets for house shows that they can't run TV at, because the arena's not big enough, because the arena's not big enough, but it's a way when they fly people out, and this is the downside of having a show on Wednesday, because, you know, the perfect time for house shows is weekends. But if you fly people out on Wednesday, maybe you run a house show on Tuesday or Thursday, in a smaller adjacent market. And then if you do it on Thursday, maybe then you go to another adjacent market on Friday that you can drive to or fly to. And you know, you get people work 2-3 days in a row. That can also bridge doing a live Dynamite and a live Rampage. If you do a Thursday house show and there's a small market in between. And to me, that's what makes sense. I don't think it makes sense to run a house show at Kia Forum or, you know, at their arena of choice in Boston or Dallas or Orlando. Like, you got to save those ticket buying fans to help enhance your TV show. They're already going to markets where there's diminishing crowds because of how often they're going there. So I don't think you want to run a non-TV event and take away another major market that can look good on TV. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah. No, I agree there. I think you want to run different markets, different buildings. Like you said, buildings you can't run on TV. I would also be curious what the talent's going to think of this too. I don't know, because I just don't know how their contracts are structured. If it's a downside where you're getting per nights and they just make up the difference at the end of the year if you don't hit the downside, or is it a straight-up salary? Like, you get X amount a year. You're going to get $500,000 a year. Because if it's a straight-up salary thing, I think you're going to have some wrestlers go, whoa, wait a minute. I guaranteed, you know, I signed here with my yearly salary based upon the fact that we only ran on Wednesdays. Now you want to throw, you know, one or two more nights a week in there. Like, we may have to talk about my pay a little bit if it's not going to go up. I mean, there's going to have to be some consideration taken there if that's how their contracts are structured. I just don't know. So there's, I think there are some logistical hurdles to it. Maybe some of those deals are on, you know, X amount of matches per year or appearances per year or whatever it is. But I do think it's a way, again, you could get guys onto those house shows that aren't wrestling on TV. I'm not saying you want to build an entire house show out of guys that aren't on TV. But maybe if you build, you know, half your matches with regular TV guys that are on TV frequently and fill it out with, you know, guys that just you haven't been able to use on TV very much, but you want to give them time in the ring, it's probably not the worst way to go. Just mix those two, you know. And then you can also rotate guys in and out, not if they have the same guys, the same quote-unquote TV guys on those house shows every week. Maybe you're only asking then your TV guys to go to a house show once a month instead of, or 1 week a month instead of, you know, every week.
Yes. Ryan, what else for us?
I have a question on MJF. He did like a promo somewhere to Ric Flair, mentioned like the ring rats, like getting with him after the shows. Is that really something that he does, or he gets pursued by at least? Because I know he's thought he was engaged or married, and I thought it was odd he was mentioning that considering his relationship status.
Ryan, I have it on good authority, and I don't want to mess up, you know, his real-life relationship, but he gets all the rats. He gets all the rats. There's no fidelity. It's all infidelity. No, I mean, of course, it's just a gimmick. I mean, it's just he's cutting promos and trying to – I mean, Ric Flair is married to Beth all those years. He's cutting those great promos about, you know, being the 60-minute man out of the ring, and we know that was entirely fiction. Oh, man, now I'm really getting him in trouble. No, I mean, of course, Ryan, he's cutting a worked promo as a heel that is not, you know, including his real-life relationship, but I don't think people need to include in their wrestling characters their real life. I mean, how many pop stars had significant others over the years, or movie stars who were heartthrobs, and Hollywood didn't want them, or their agents, their, you know, music industry agents, record label agents, don't want them saying that they're in a relationship because they want all their fans to think they have a chance. And MJF wants everyone to think he's not settled down with one person living a rather conservative life. He wants to project the idea that he's, yeah, you know, you can pick his language, you know, banging all the rats or whatever. So anyway, Mike, do you have any authoritative information on this?
I do not. But okay. I'll see if I can find out. I'll ask around.
I have a feeling MJF's significant other is aware of how this business works and understands he's an actor on TV portraying an image that's meant to help sell tickets and get heat. Ryan, appreciate it, as always.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for taking the call. And fortunately, I didn't get to see MJF's behavior at the time I went to a show because it seems like I never stay at the hotel where the wrestlers are at to see any of that shindigs are going now.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Oh, man. When the WWF came to town, and they started coming to town in the mid-80s, and I went to those house shows, I also went to the hotel afterwards where they all stayed. And I also got to know, when I was like too like young and naive to know what it was, who MJF was referring to tonight, out and the regulars and like it's so fun. I was so like crazy naive, like at when I was like 11, 12, 13, whatever. I was probably 15. I don't want to admit it that I didn't understand what was going on when these, you know, nice girls would get in an elevator with the wrestler and wave bye, Wade, and we'll talk to you next time. And they're going up in the elevator. I was like, I didn't know. I kind of knew and I kind of didn't. But I mean, that is it. That was a lifestyle back then. It's a derogatory term, and I don't say it in a misogynist way. I say it because that's just by definition historically accurate what they were called. They were called ring rats. It was like, I guess, the term of affection. There were regulars in all these towns, and there were guys who knew, and they showed up. Their girl would be waiting for them. And MJF's playing off of that. He's a historian. He knows his wrestling history, and he's playing that up. It's tongue in cheek. Just because he says on TV has nothing to do with how he feels in real life about women. It doesn't mean that, you know, what you say shouldn't match the character you're trying to portray, but obviously what he's saying matches the character he's trying to portray. All right. Let's see. Let's go. We'll take one more call. We'll go to David in North Carolina. David, welcome.
Hey.
Good to talk to you again. What's your mind?
Hey. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Can you hear me? You can? Awesome.
Yep, we can, David.
First off, I really enjoyed listening to this show, and I wanted to say that I do really enjoy that or appreciate that the PW Torch has a lot of integrity, when not one, with the story, like the Saudi Arabia story. And it's good to have somebody who is a lodestar and a stalwart that you can see something on Twitter and wonder, is this true? And then you log into the Torch and go, it's not there. It's true. There's not. And so that's something I definitely appreciate.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's also, I would do one more thing on that. What's scary about that is that it's as crazy as it would be for Saudi Arabia to buy an all-American company like WWE, it sounded plausible. And that's disturbing, because I feel like in a world full of normal people with normal morals, where it's like incumbent upon you not to be a horrific human being, it would not be possible.
It would be Vince McMahon's final middle finger gesture to America if that's what he did with the, you know, all-American variety show that he thought and marketed WWE to be. And it would just be one of the most revealing things that he could do about his character and that he's in it for the money. And, you know, y'all were suckers for thinking otherwise. Stephanie, you know, I mean, what a troll job to lead off her tweet going, then, now, together, forever. As she's resigning from her family business, and to troll Vince McMahon, like, yes, forever, Dad, except I'm out of here. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now forever, it hasn't happened yet.
Unless you have a lot of money. I mean, so the question that I had was, it was about the Hook match. I had a viewer tonight who was watching via Discord together. He's from Australia. It's his first time ever watching. He tuned in because he saw a picture of Hook, which is apparently a reason to do. And he enjoyed the match. But I was wondering, you know, listening to your previous shows, you mentioned that you liked the idea of Jungle Hook, Hook Perry, whatever, not the difference of fencing, but that you liked the idea of them tag teaming or being together as like two friends who look out for each other, but not teaming on the regular. And I was wondering what you thought of the match changed your opinion on that. If you think they should team more regularly, or if you think that they should remain at a distance, just like just buddies who, you know, help each other out when they're in peril.
Yeah, I think there's something here, Mike. I was watching the match and just wondering the same thing. Is this a team that they can run with in a modern way as a team that is, you know, they're credible athletes, but they're also marketed as sort of a heartthrob tag team? We haven't had much of that for a while in pro wrestling. We've had some some bad attempts at it. But that's, you know, an undeniable quality with them. And I think part of the marketing and part of the idea of putting them together But I also think, you know, fans like both of them, and they think Hook is super cool, and Jungle Boy, they're, you know, is one of the pillars, and they kind of chose him to be a guy that they've rooted for. Is teaming them up, is there chemistry there? Is that something you keep doing? Or is it, like David just said, is it better to have them, like, team up when the occasion calls for it, but not have them be known as a team? I guess that's the question at this sort of fork in the road for them.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a fork in the road for Jungle Boy specifically, because here's a guy who just came out of a tag team who it seemed like they were going to push as a single, and now you're going to put him right back into another tag team after he's only been a single for a couple of months. Does it just typecast him as a tag team guy for the rest of his career? I think a lot of it depends on what they want to do with him. You know, if the plan is we want Jungle Boy to be our lead babyface in 5 years, then as a singles guy, I don't know that putting him in a tag team full time is the right thing to do. I think you probably want to do like you said, you know, you team them up here and there when it's necessary. But if they don't know if he's going to be that babyface they lean on in the future and really try to build, or if they just think maybe he's better in a tag team, or if they think it's not going to matter and they can move him from a single to a tag team a year from now, then yeah, it's something you go for. But personally speaking, I think if you really want to get him going as a singles guy, and they think that he's someone that they can lean on as a, you know, as a pillar in the singles division, especially as a top babyface, I don't know you necessarily want to throw him back into a full-time tag team after you just got him out of one.
Not really a counterpoint, but another lens to look at this through is for Hook. Is Hook ready to work singles matches? When you think about where Hook was a year or so ago and where he is now and how crazy the crowd would go when he'd appear off camera with Tony, you know, after a show went off the air, and reaction to him. And then it's a little bit of spinning wheels. You know, he's there. He's on Rampage. Okay, now he's on Dynamite a few weeks, you know, more weeks than in the past in a short period of time. But, you know, he's marketable. But is he ready to do singles matches against higher-end, credible opponents? And if not, is Jungle Boy the right guy, you know, the right person to team with him, because you sort of have that heartthrob gimmick, tag team gimmick that you can do, which he wasn't, you know, with Marco Stunt or Luchasaurus. Can you actually just, and especially if you think you have enough people lined up, enough singles baby faces where Jungle Boy's singles push should be maybe next July, let's say you have that circle. Well, you do 5-6 months of Jungle Boy and Hook, and there's a couple tag teams maybe you have in your mind that you'd work with them, and it's a way to get Hook on TV more often, but protect him because he's still green, but he can get better in the meantime, actually making a positive difference by being on TV. David, what's your answer? What do you think?
Well, I think that about when you mentioned Hook not being ready, I was in the Greensboro Coliseum last December, not this year. They didn't come to North Carolina this year. We best have angered them. But in the Greensboro Coliseum a year ago, when Hook did come out after the show, and there were multitudes of Hook chants. There were Hook chants I didn't even think would be Hook chants. They were chanting for his finishing move. They were chanting and throughout the show. And there was like all these T-shirts and everything. And I thought, God, this guy's got a chance to really be a breakout star. And then somehow they dropped that and bungled it. And I know that the argument has been, at least what I've seen on message boards, and is that, you know, well, he's not ready, he's green. But a lot of people, if the crowd is ready for you, I think you're ready. And I think you can cover it up. I think you can find a way to crowd into it enough. They did it with Goldberg. I mean, you know, they're kind of doing it with Jay Cargill. And I think that they could have pushed him. You know, it's not like he has to have a 10-minute classic with whoever, John Moxley. If they really wanted to get him over, I don't think they should do this to Moxley, because he is a big deal there. But, I mean, if they had him like, beat Moxley within 3 minutes, that would be like, holy crap. And I think the crowd would buy it, because it's really not about exactly the product you're selling. It's about how you sell them. And I've just been baffled by that, the decision they've made for that.
Mike, from what you've seen of Hook, do you think they should have done what David just described? Like, it's pro wrestling. You can push people to win. You can put them against opponents and work out a match, even if they're green, where, you know, as we saw with Goldberg, or we've seen with Jade Cargill, if there's something special there, you don't necessarily want to wait for them to be polished to put them in a position to capitalize on that popularity. Have they waited too long? Has he cooled off? Could they have camouflaged his weaknesses and accentuated what fans were clinging to during the time or attracted to during the time that he was getting those reactions.
You know, his situation is so unique. I think with someone else, you may have been able to do that and kind of rushing along. With Hook, though, it's so unique because his first match was that first match on TV. You know, granted, like, I'm sure he had matches in training and stuff like that, but his first match in front of people was that first television match. So do you really want to rush it with someone who's that green? I mean, he's literally brand new. That just doesn't happen to a normal person. You know, it doesn't happen unless your dad works for the company. And I'm not trying to say that there's nepotism in regards to Hook. No, like, he's obviously talented. He's obviously good. But it just is not a lot of guys have their first match on TV. You know what I mean? So it's just, given his circumstances, I don't know that I would do it with him because I think that it's really risky with how brand new he is. But someone else that is in a different situation, I think you can. I mean, I guess you could argue that the WCW did with Goldberg, really. I don't know. I don't think his first match necessarily was on TV. I think he wrestled some dark matches before then, but he was also brand new, and it worked out okay for them. But I just think, you know, an indie guy you bring in who's new, who's maybe never been on TV before, but has worked for a year and a half, 2 years, it's probably easier to do something like that with someone in that position rather than Hook, who's just so brand new.
David, back to you.
I can sort of buy that if they didn't also have those problems with, like, Wardlow. It feels like whenever they get somebody, the crowd is just fire and behind. They drop it. It's like they're the clumsiest waiter in the world trying to just serve the best dish to this one table that's in the back corner of the room, and they just can't get to it because they're on roller skates. And I... Because Wardlow, look after Double or Nothing, people were just exploding. I thought he was going to cry when he was looking out of the audience because of the support they had. And then he showed up the next week, and then the week after that, and then he sang Wardlow's World, like it's Wayne's World, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's gone. And I really wish they could, when they have someone like that, not just Hook. I mean, Hook's one of many examples. Brett Baker, when people were just clamoring for her to be a face and were, you know, having fits over her, when they have that example to try, you know, to capture that ephemeral thing that is so hard to actually achieve, and people dream of achieving their entire life, and then someone on your roster has achieved it, I just think they got to find a way to do that. Imagine if when people were huge into Steve Austin, you know, I'll use him because maybe he's closer to someone like Wardlow. They're huge into Brock Lesnar, and they just said, yeah, you know, I know they're huge into him. If we can cool him down and just heat him up later, like he's a hot pocket, and people aren't hot pockets. That's my take on that.
Well put. Yeah. Well put. Was there something else you want to bring up, David? I think you were moving on to something else. Yeah.
I did just want to ask one more, and it kind of goes on the same vein. We're talking about using people. I personally just really think that Toni Storm has a huge hit factor, and I know the crowd has not gotten behind her quite like others have, but do you think they're using her appropriately? Do you think they could be getting more out of her? Her look, like if you were driving down the street and saw her on a billboard, I think you'd side-eye the billboard and go, what's that? I mean, I feel like her look is impressive.
Yeah, I've been an advocate, and this actually kind of applies to the Hook thing, which is whatever reasons they have to not push Toni Storm, at some point, Mike, you want to pick somebody and go with them and put the promotional – and you got to have credibility. You can't just do it with anybody. But if somebody has an it factor, as David called it, with Toni – just, like, do what might be considered over-pushing her. Treat her like a star. Frame her as a star. Have fans who tune in go, wow, this person is being featured in a way that tells me she's destined for great things, and now I want to root for her or against her achieving those things. And AEW just, that's not Tony Khan's forte. That's not a specialty to just go, all right, we're getting behind this person and we're going to go all in for 6 months and see what happens. And then we'll make a call on whether it was, you know, whether we want to steer more into it or away from it. And you only have a small window to do that before you sort of define them in a certain spot. Tom Martin has often talked about that. You know, once someone's been in a certain spot in WWE for a while, it's not really that fruitful to have a conversation about, well, are they elevated? Like, you kind of, once you define somebody a certain way, if the company doesn't have a history of telling the story that they move up the rankings, it's people start losing interest. And that's, you know, that's kind of the argument about the risk with Hook too, although the counter argument is that he's just green and it just isn't, you know, there's a risk in pushing him too soon and exposing him, I guess. But with Toni Storm, I don't think there is. What have you thought of how they've handled her, Mike?
Yeah, I think they've handled her okay. I mean, there's been some stops and starts, but of course they've done that with everybody. Ultimately,
yeah.
You know, ultimately, I think the crowd is going to tell you who you should push and who you shouldn't. I mean, that's what we should be doing if you're booking, is listening to those reactions. And, you know, there's been nights where, especially early on, where I thought her reactions were a lot louder and had a lot more oomph behind them from the live crowd than maybe they have recently. And that could have something to do with the booking, certainly. But, yeah, I think it's – I think the risk you run by just handpicking someone and saying, well, I think there's something there, we're going to go with her – is the Roman Reigns effect of, and maybe to a lesser extent because it's not, you know, the very top level of your card. But I don't think you want your fans feeling like you're shoving something down their throat and making them like someone that they don't like either. There's got to be some sort of natural steam behind the person in order to for the fans to hook on when you do push them. So I think if they really wanted to try to strap a rocket to her and shoot her to the next level, earlier on in her push probably would have been the time to do it. You know, I'm talking like maybe 3-4 months ago. And they were doing it for a little bit, but again, as it happens a lot, there's a lot of starts and stops, and it feels like there's some momentum interruptions there.
Yeah, well put. I think if you're Toni Khan, you want to pick who you push hard carefully, and you don't want to script them to say things or cast them in a way that is controversial. That runs counter to how people see them. And that was the problem with Roman. I just don't think that would have been the problem with Toni Storm. Like, that's the thing is, I think she's a good example of when you take that chance, especially with the women's division that needed you to take a chance on someone because so many people have been cycled in and cycled out who were green or, frankly, not very charismatic or just, yeah, I mean, whatever. And Toni just felt like she's different, and she's coming to you with some acclaim. And I think, you know, I think it could have worked, but – yeah, it's not that the ship has sailed, but that window to do it quickly and get, you know, just make it seem like she's not just going to blend, you know, merge into the speed of traffic, as I say. She's going to be something special. And you got to pick them. You got to pick some people out like that now and then and go with them. David, what else?
You know, that's most of what I'm going to say. Thank you for the answers. It's the thing is, Toni Khan is smart. I mean, you can tell that he's intelligent, and you can tell that he knows what he's doing in the broader sense of things. But he just needs to be able to reach out and find that the star that can take them to the next level and grab them by the throat and not let go. You know, in closing, just again, I thank you guys for holding off on the Saudi story, but being able to check the site and not sit there, let me know that it wasn't her. And I highly recommend that people go VIP. And I don't just say that, you know, as lip service or anything like that. There's a lot that you get, and it's really good, and it's great entertainment, especially if you go for, like, long drives or do anything that is quiet and you need something to listen to. So definitely go VIP as well. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, David. Thanks, David. Call again.
Sure thing.
Yep, you bet. David did some really good reports last year on AW Dark 2. People want to look them up. There's a lot of good analysis and entertainment built into his reports. Yeah, that was really good stuff. All right, always good to hear from David. All right, let's, Mike, let's wrap up with some emails here. I don't even want to tell you. If you haven't looked at the clock, don't look at the clock. You don't want to know. time is flying. That's good. I mentioned we got an email about the Ricky Starks Action Andretti promo. Ken B says, overall, another really solid Dynamite bolstered by another big hot crowd. That said, a big yikes on that Ricky Starks Action Andretti promo. After all the momentum that Starks has been picking up in recent weeks, it's sad to see him out there with Andretti trying to get a babyface pop by mocking speech impediments and making borderline misogynistic comments about the place of a woman. This type of humor might have worked for The Rock in 99, but in 2023, you could really sense the crowd getting noticeably uncomfortable by a couple of the comments. Wondering if you guys had the same reaction. Thanks. Go Jags and go VIP. Thank you, Ken B. You can't even control your woman line. I mean, and then, you know, her hands were between, and Andretti go, our hands were between my legs. I just thought it was real tone deaf. And, you know, I mean, we commented on it. But anything you want to add to that, Mike?
Cringe inducing is the word I would use.
Yeah. All right, Zach in Texas says, gentlemen, what a show. From top to bottom, this show was excellent. I think everyone was told to just go out and hit each other really hard because people were lighting each other up all night long. Hook suplexing Big Bill with ease was quite a sight. By the way, Big Bill gets points for selling that thing. Like, and it wasn't cartoonish like Hogan selling, you know, or Shawn Michaels selling for Hulk Hogan, I should say. I had the Hogan Kidman thing in my head, but like, it wasn't like, it was just like, what the F? You know, I mean, he just mouthed that afterward.
Yeah.
It just felt genuine. Like, I want to put this guy over. So anyway, Zach says, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little disappointed though. Mercedes Moné not showing up was a real bummer. Personally, I blame Todd Martin and his negativity. Seriously though, AEW really should have announced Saraya and Tony as the team weeks ago instead of allowing everyone to get their hopes up. It does feel like they're building to an Outsiders versus AEW Originals Women's Blood and Guts match. So long as Mercedes comes in for that, I'll call it even. And that's the thing. Just because she wasn't here this week doesn't mean she won't be in. And just because I am telling you that, you know, there's some baggage with her that, you know, Tony's due diligence might, you know, cause him to shy away a little bit, or that might make her difficult to negotiate with at this point in a way that Tony's used to with others, doesn't mean it's not still ultimately a good deal for him and that she wouldn't in a different environment be a perfectly good addition to the locker room off camera addition on. She might be. I'm just reporting that the way she left is not seen as 100% yay, way to show the man, Sasha, that I think some people spun or framed the story originally. And I think as more has come out, you know, Tony might have heard and whatever. So, but she'd be, how big of a get would she be, Mike? I mean, like, if you're now again, Tony shouldn't pay CM Punk money for her, but she might think she deserves that.
Yeah.
And if she does, I don't think Tony should pay it. I don't think. But how valuable is she? How valuable could she be?
Yeah. Punk money. No, I would agree there. You know, I think she's baggage aside, you know, she's probably paid in the top, maybe the average of the top three of your women's division. I mean, I think she's somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
You can make the argument that she may even be, should be paid the most in the women's division make that argument.
My concern is that she wants double what anybody else is making because she's triple the star and she's giving them a price cut.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
And that's
I think it's compensatory about where the rest of the division is.
Yeah.
You know, 10% more? Okay, 10% more than who's the highest right now? Like, I think, you know, I might be able to be on board with that. But, yeah. Double, like, no, I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
And, again, I'm saying that, for example, I just want people to not splice that as some sort of reporting. I'm not saying that, but my concern is she thinks she's worth triple and she would ask for double. Like, that's what people are portraying to me as, like, kind of her attitude and her sense of self-worth. And, I think she's really valuable. And I think she can get a seven-figure deal from AEW. But I just don't know if she's showing up on the same page as Tony. But I don't know. You know, I think if a deal could have been done reasonably, it would have been by now. That's the thing. Like, the fact that she wasn't there tonight adds a little more to my feeling that she might be overvaluing herself, which I was told would be a concern if you wanted a deal.
I can see that.
Yeah,
I can see that.
All right. Chris Fielder from Truth and Consequences, New Mexico, says, hey, guys, I have only one thing to say, and that is congratulations, Wade. I feel that you alone changed the future course of Dynamite as we know it. I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not yet. I knew you had some stroke in professional wrestling, but I had no clue just how deep that stroke was. You uttered one thing on your post show last week about the ring skirts and the barricade covers not matching, and AEW instantly bows down to your demands. You, sir, are the man. I still don't know if he's being sarcastic. Next. I mean, he's laying it on thick, but I don't know if he's sorry. Anyway, next, if you would just demand Tony Khan hire me for whatever gig he has available, I would be forever grateful. Thanks in advance. With love from a Saudi public investment firm, Chris Fielder. I love entertaining emails. I don't even know what to make of that. But I assume it was on the way, and it just didn't get there in time. I mean, I doubt it didn't cross their mind to have their new color scheme match between the ring and the stage. But, you know, hey, if literally Tony has, if someone listened to AEW, oh, should our ring skirt match? And Tony's like, that's a good idea. Let's put a rush order on it. Then I'll take credit. What the heck? All right, JB from Detroit, on a more serious note, I thought AEW did well tonight, being in L.A. and mixing in celebrities in an appropriate way. MJF did a good job playing off of Ken and Freddie, and Danhausen had fun interaction with Housen. Also, with Prince Jr. being a former disillusioned WWE writer and having a current wrestling podcast, could you see him having a greater role with AEW outside of a one-off appearance? As always, love the show and go VIP. Mike, have you listened to Freddie's podcast?
I have not. I've heard good things, though. I've heard it's pretty good, but I have not listened to it yet. I think I've listened to one episode, maybe the first one. But it was just clips of it, but I haven't actually listened to the whole thing in its entirety.
Yeah, I don't know if Freddie's a right – well, I'm almost sure. I don't know if he's the right kind of ex-writer to bring in. Because I pitched bringing somebody in who had been around WWE in the trenches – and kind of knows about the checks and balances and the how to layer things so Tony doesn't get bombarded with more than he can handle, and some fires are put out before they make it on TV. Like, let's make fun of speech impediments, babyface. And there's gonna, just somebody who's gonna walk in and go, I'm not here to change the tone of AEW. I'm not even here to script it, write script promos. Or suggest booking ideas. I'm just here because I have years of experience seeing how WWE runs a smooth ship and just get the logistics down. Because that's kind of part of what the writers do. It's about the logistics of setting up and producing a promo and getting people in the right spot at the right time and asking the right questions of the wrestlers to go, okay, what are you saying tonight? Okay, I'm following the storylines. 2 weeks ago, you said this. This thing was only set on Rampage, and I don't think half the Dynamite audience has heard you say that yet. So when you make that point, I'm not scripting it for you. I'm not telling you what to say, and I didn't come up with a storyline idea. You did all that, but maybe in your promo, you want to catch people up, the half the audience who hasn't seen what was said on Rampage, you want to catch them up by phrasing it this way when you bring that point up. That's what they need more of. And that's what a WWE writer has experience doing. Don't have to have worked for WWE to have done that, but I think there's no better job prep than having done that in WWE to have somebody come in and do that. I don't think Freddie Prinze, my original point was, I don't think he's the one who's going to necessarily do that because he sort of has that celebrity aspect to him, but maybe he would. Maybe you need that celebrity aspect to have anyone listen to you, and he'd be the guy to sit down and be like, oh, my God, this is the guy from Scooby-Doo. And I'm going to listen to what he tells me. But that was my point, with the ex-writer thing, is somebody who just can polish some things up about the logistical execution of things backstage, which you see a lot of evidence of needing work.
Yeah, almost like a quality control type role. Not necessarily someone, like you said, who's pitching ideas, but someone who's just making sure everything makes sense and making sure there's not some quality stuff that doesn't slip through the cracks, like making fun of someone with a speech impediment when you're a babyface. Stuff like that. I think something like that is absolutely necessary. Especially Tony's doing a lot. Like, he's doing everything.
Yeah.
like it's hard. And it's not even his only job. that's the other thing.
I know, that's the other thing, yeah. That's crazy.
There's a lot going on.
Can you imagine what Vince McMahon would have said after the first Wheeler Yuta promo? Like,
oh my God.
Vince was like, what was that? What are you, some 10-year-old having a temper tantrum over bedtime or getting served vegetable? Like, settle down, Wheeler Yuta. Like, and you need someone to say that. Like, this is not becoming. This is not good for you. And we can tweak this. You're people like you. You're a good wrestler. We want to feature you. Don't throw this tantrum on TV with your voice cracking. That's not a good look. You need someone to tell them that. I shouldn't be the only one doing that. I feel like I'm mean doing it, but I'm not trying to be mean, but you're on national TV and you're getting paid to be there and you're a really good wrestler and people like you. Stop undoing it by talking like that. Vince would have said, stop it. And Tony needs some people like to say that to Ricky Starks So anyway,
The role might be to be the bad guy. I mean, that's kind of what, let's face it. That's what, the head of talent relations in WWE, that role, you're paid to be the bad guy. You're paid to be the guy that fires people and give people bad news, and Vince doesn't have to. I mean, that's basically what the role is. It's nothing not all to do with creative, but, you're paid to be the bad guy.
And Vince has no trouble going, what was that?
That was hideous.
What are you thinking? And, and he's not always wrong. He's where he is for a reason, and there's some you know, I've talked to a lot of people like, yeah, there's that about Vince, that about Vince, that about Vince. That's awful. But, man, he knows this, this, and this really well. I'm losing my voice just imitating Wheeler Yuta's voice cracking. I'm glad we're near the end here. I don't know if the pipe said. Grant from Detroit just emailed, said, hey, guys, you did not answer my second question. What do you see them doing with Kyle O'Reilly now that Adam Cole is back and Bobby Fish is gone? Part of me is tempted to go on a sidebar and not answer it again, Mike, but that'd be mean. What do you think?
So I'll be honest with you. I don't think anything. I think they'll do exactly what they've done right now. Like, I'm not sure that they're going to be together. Like, I don't know what tonight would have given me the impression that Adam Cole is going to be anything but a lone baby face on his own. I don't know if you feel any different.
I think that's the right move, by the way. I don't think Kyle O'Reilly – I mean, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole can be a tag team. If they want – and, I mean, I don't think after tonight they should be a heel tag team. But, you know, Cole and O'Reilly against Hook and Jungle Boy, if Adam Cole and Bobby Fish are – I'm sorry, and O'Reilly or heels could have worked if you did cut this promo, if Cole didn't cut this promo tonight. But that's not what they're doing. I think Cole should be, if he is physically capable and it's safe, I think he should be a top push singles babyface at this point. And I think he should be an opponent for MJF down the line. And I think Kyle O'Reilly had a moment when he could have been more. And I think when he got that chance in NXT and it went really poorly, I think he moved down. You know, and I wouldn't prioritize him. And I like Kyle O'Reilly's work. And there was a time where I thought he could be kind of a next Daniel Bryan type, you know, that just sort of unassuming, you know, undersized, affable, everyman type character. And I think that kind of passed. I think I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, he got a chance in NXT and it just didn't work. You know what I mean? It just didn't work well. So.
And I think we saw some more stuff out of Cole tonight, too. I mean, that Cole promo was sort of it was the babyface version of the Mark Henry promo without the attack, because the babyface would attack somebody. Yeah. But that's really what it was. I mean, the lead up to it and then the swerve, but the happy swerve of, like, the bad news is for the bad news I have is for the rest of the AEW locker room because Adam Cole is back, or however he put it. Like, it was good, and that. It strikes me as someone who's going to be off on his own now, not necessarily in a tag team with anybody.
I think it's sort of, you know, I don't think it counts as a swerve promo in the storyline sense, but
in the sense that the Mark Henry one was, but it had that same tone to it of like, ooh, this is not good. This is, it seems like it's going down the road of this could be some bad news here. And he even alluded to it before he said, of course, the bad news was for AEW, because he was back.
Yes. Yes. All right, very good. Mike, anything else you want to add from Dynamite?
I don't think so, no. I think we covered most of it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I hope we didn't miss anything too big. If so, it's the fault of the emailers and callers for not steering us towards it. Again, listen to Mike and Andrew every week. Search PW Torch on your podcast app or check out the links to the shows at pwtorch.com. Mike, always a pleasure talking AEW or wrestling in general with you. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for listening and calling and emailing, and we'll talk to you all next time.